I am very happy to testify before any Congressional Oversight Committee. I have nothing to hide. I can explain and validate everything that I've done. So, you know, it's going to be inconvenient if they actually are out there essentially threatening to make my life miserable. But I'm going to do what I need to do, and that is cooperate fully, because we have nothing to hide at all.
Despite Joe Biden's last-minute preemptive pardon shielding him from past alleged crimes, Anthony Fauci still faced a high-stakes Senate grilling under subpoena from Rand Paul, where any new falsehood under oath about gain-of-function funding, the Wuhan lab leak, alleged destroyed records, or the contradictions in his own newly released diaries could expose him to fresh perjury charges that the pardon does not cover.
You could not hide that your agency had funded the Wuhan research or your long history of defending gain-of-function research. The only alternative left was to argue that COVID-19 did not originate in the Wuhan lab. You were not a detached observer. You had an institutional interest in the public believing that federally funded research had nothing to do with the pandemic. It was a conflict of interest from the very beginning. The authors of the proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2 privately had serious doubts about a natural origin. Within days, though, they flipped, and they all wrote in proximal origin that the virus was almost certainly not a laboratory construct. That paper was then used by the government and the media and you to discredit Americans who were asking the same questions that you and the authors were asking yourselves privately.
Fauci's preemptive Biden pardon theoretically shields him from past criminal charges tied to his NIH work. He faced no genuine risk of self-incrimination and therefore had no valid Fifth Amendment privilege to refuse answering questions. Answers to questions millions of Americans demand. Any attempt to invoke it at the hearing could allow the committee to compel his testimony and pursue a contempt finding.
So what was the Dan David Award? Do you remember, Doc?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully declined to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
It was a $900,000 cash award. $900,000 cash award. And he got it, because he used federal employees to get it. And this wasn't the only award, was it, Dr. Fauci? In fact, you applied for and received at least 8 other federal cash prizes on federal time using federal employees and federal resources. Here they are over my shoulder.
Under advice of his stable of high-priced attorneys, Fauci pleaded the Fifth 111 times to a variety of simple and inane questions, causing him to look incredibly desperate.
This testimony is from Anthony Fauci. This is not a game with his lawyers. He can advise. His lawyers can give him advice. He's got a half dozen here. They're all allowed to talk to him.
Yes.
All right?
Yeah.
But the attorneys are not recognized. In fact, the attorney was told not to sit at the table, and he's not obeying that recommendation. There's a row behind you, sir. That's where you were told to sit, and you're not. And now you're disrupting the proceedings. And so, look, this is the way Anthony Fauci wants to be remembered, for a lawyer not listening to the rules. That's the way you want to be remembered, and that's what you're going to do. You are not recognized, sir. Security, please remove him from the room. In the red folder on your table is a copy of Section 192 of Title II of the U.S. Code. Your counsel has been provided a copy as well. That section makes it a crime for a witness appearing under subpoena to refuse to answer any questions pertinent to the question under inquiry. Do you have that in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Let the record record that the witness has refused to answer whether there's a folder in front of him based on his Fifth Amendment right.
What day of the week is it today?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy
1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. We, of course, have a lot of news to cover today. The big siege in Spain, absolutely jaw-dropping amounts of people crossing the Moroccan border into Spain on the heels of the amnesty granted to them by their socialist president. Maybe the most frustrating dichotomy that exists right now is that, is you either have, if you're in Western Europe or America, you got one of two options. You can be the conservative party, which means they do absolutely nothing for your people, but do serve Israel, or you can be on the side of the Muslim socialists, or the socialists who open the door to the Muslims, or whatever. And just yet another example of just the full-scale, all-out race war against white people that is happening across the world. And it's exhausting. It really is. And continuous. And easily solvable. So it's therefore on purpose from the people in power doing it. We'll show you those videos. I got so many of those. It's kind of ridiculous. I think I'm missing one of the pages of the videos as well. Oh, no. Here it is. I found it. We also have 100 IDF soldiers fleeing their base. This is a very interesting one. We can go to clip number two here. More than 100 IDF soldiers and commanders drop their weapon and basically stage a walkout protest in the middle of all of Israel's conflicts in the area. Let's go now to clip number two here. So there's the group chanting. And you know, it's one of those things. This actually happens, you know, kind of often when it comes to Israel. Like, there will be a big protest, and it'll be like, these people are protesting against the government and against the war. And you're like, aha, see, Israelis protesting the war, saying we shouldn't be at war, we shouldn't be killing all these Palestinians. And then you look into it, and it's like, well, actually, they're protesting their particular involvement, actually their entire life is sponsored by the Israeli government because they just sit around and read books all day as their livelihood. They're like, that's what we're supposed to do. We are the priest class. We do nothing but study the Torah, and we shouldn't have to go fight. I'm like, okay, bam. So they're not actually against the war. They just are against themselves in the war. They want everybody else. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like that, where you see this, you go, okay, the IDF battalion, you know, dropping their weapons and walking out. I know their morale hasn't been very high. How could it be with all the humiliation that they've been confronted with over the last several years? Turns out it's a little bit different than that. Dozens of IDF soldiers desert SDE Taiman, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Stay Taiman base after commander takes down banners in disciplinary action. Dozens of Givati Brigade soldiers walked off base after their commander took down what he said were signs depicting Satan and the Angel of Death, which he said glorified hazing of younger troops, while soldiers said some of them commemorated soldiers killed in Lebanon. It's just one of those things. Just one of those things you hear about IDF soldiers. They're protesting. They're throwing down their weapons. They're refusing to fight. It's like, finally, people with morals. Oh my God. You know, finally, people are sick. They're just like, how many children can we kill? This can't go on. We have to stand up. Oh no. No, actually, they're protesting the fact that their commander removed their Satan worshiping sign. Oh, okay. Oh, so never mind then. Dozens of soldiers stationed at this base in southern Israel left the compound without authorization on Thursday in protest of a disciplinary action. According to the IDF, the deserting soldiers, members of the Givati Brigade, Zabar Battalion, were protesting their commander's decision to remove signs and drawings related to non-normative incidents that reflected the hierarchical divide between a veteran and younger troops. A soldier serving at the base said some of the removed signs commemorated troops who were killed when the battalion was deployed to Lebanon, a claim the battalion commander denied. The battalion commander sent a message to the soldiers' parents explaining the disciplinary actions. Those of you who remember the veteran soldiers' hazing of younger troops from your own military service know how serious these practices are and how many soldiers are harmed by humiliation and abuse they involve. It's like, you remember being in the army, right? Dear parents of the soldiers, you remember what it was like, right? You remember the abuse that you were subjected to, the psychological programming inflicted on you by trauma-based mind control. You remember that, right? You have fond memories of that, don't you? He added that he therefore decided to remove wooden signs depicting Satan, the Angel of Death, and other symbols that represent exactly those practices. The battalion commander rejected claims that items commemorating fallen soldiers had been destroyed, saying he had decided to remove the remaining banners, except a small number that I left in place because of their sentimental value. Well, the man is clearly an anti-Semite. The man is clearly an anti-Semite who wants the destruction of all Jews. There's something about this that you got to appreciate. Or not, whatever, you know. Just, this is normal, I guess. Our greatest ally. It's just like, okay, IDF soldiers are protesting, you know, they're laying down their weapons, they're refusing to fight. It's like, oh my God, they are human. They grew a heart like the Grinch. This is amazing. And it's like, no, they're mad that the satanic altar they erected got torn down. It's, yeah, what? And it's like, no, actually they say it wasn't a satanic altar, it was banners commemorating their fallen people. It's like, that's what, one of those is a lie. Somebody's lying about it. It's just kind of typical to be like, no, it wasn't us who were in trouble. We didn't do the bad thing. We didn't have unapproved, you know, satanic altars that we were worshiping at or anything. It's that that guy just didn't want us to mourn our fallen comrades. Actually, he didn't want us to commemorate our fellow soldiers who had fallen in the battle. It's just like, why would he do that? Why would that ever be a thing anybody did? That is not a good lie. You have to get better at lying. It's important to note that the signs have no connection whatsoever to the battalion's fallen soldiers or to any other memorial corners in the base, contrary to claims made by some media outlets. The battalion commander added that many of the soldiers had left their weapons behind, estimating they had acted under pressure. He said they were therefore willing to contain the disciplinary measures towards soldiers who returned to the base by 4 p.m. Anybody who chooses to return will be held accountable. The soldiers' actions were described as inconsistent with the Army's values and with what it expected of its troops. So there you go, folks. 100 IDF soldiers walk off the base, dropping their weapons in protest of their satanic altar being disassembled by the authorities there. So there's that. There's that going on. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, IRGC strikes Jordan again after two-hour bombardment kills Iranian troops and civilians. But, you know, obviously the big story today, it's an invasion from AlexJonesLive.com. Footage shows thousands of male African migrants storm Spanish city of Ceuta. How do you pronounce that? Astonishing footage out of Spain captured the moment. Thousands of migrants from Africa flooded the small border enclave of Ceuta, something, prompting city leaders to ask the prime minister to declare an emergency. And we can go to, oh, you know, any of the 100 videos that we got from today, because apparently there were a lot of people there filming it. So the actual story here is that there's a piece of land across the Gibraltar Strait, the Gates of Hercules, that's owned by Spain. So there's a piece of Spanish territory on the African continent. It's a little chunk of land. And there's a recent decision in Spain that that little part of Spain, however you pronounce it, Cuerta, I don't know. But the decision was that if illegal immigrants came across, they could not be deported without due process. Sort of the same playbook they're running here in America, which is you cannot do anything to stop them from coming here. That you cannot have a border wall. You cannot have guards on the border. You have to let them come here. Once you do, you cannot extricate them. You cannot get them out. You have to give them due process, whatever that means. And what that actually means is you now have to pay for their lawyer. You now have to provide them a place to stay while it goes through the court system. And how long do you think it would be to process, you know, 500,000 people at once? And so you just wonder, how long is Europe going to take this? Now, Spain, you know, the Spanish in some part are actually fighting back. There's video of people like attacking migrants in the streets and, you know, Spanish men basically going down to the border to defend it themselves. But legally, you know, this is just the sort of overt bombshell imagery of what's going on. But this is not even where the vast majority of the Spanish migrants are coming from. I mean, they're coming from small boats. There is, you know, one of the outcomes of this is that Italy is talking about kicking Spain out of the Schengen, or whatever they say, zone. So within the EU, the Schengen nations basically agree that you don't have to have a passport to travel between them, which is what allows migrants to enter into the EU however they can through Greece or through Italy, and then make their way all the way to France, where they get on a small boat and go to England, or make their way up to the Netherlands or Germany, places that have obviously more profitable welfare arrangements with their migrants. And so they're talking about kicking Spain out of that, basically to keep this contained to Spain. The solution, of course, is 2 to 3 tripod-mounted 50-caliber machine guns, but apparently that's not going to happen anytime soon. Now, you have to think that if you switched up the countries a little bit, this, I guess, could be seen as a perfectly valid excuse for Spain to now flatten all of Morocco. Why doesn't Spain now try to kill everyone in Morocco? Wouldn't that be the right thing? I mean, last time we saw images of hundreds or thousands of migrants storming over a border, Muslims storming over a border and breaking into a country they don't belong to, that was seen as an excuse to commit abject genocide against the innocent people that didn't cross the border who still live in the country of origin. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I have a feeling that's not going to be the outcome this time, because Israel is allowed to have borders. They are allowed to defend themselves. Europe is not. You're not allowed to. You also have to wonder if this isn't organized as punishment against Spain. Spain, after all, one of the very few European countries who actually did and is standing up to Israel, not allowing their military bases to be used to start the Iran war or anything else. And you had, yeah, I should have grabbed it. There's a lot of video recently of Netanyahu sort of basically just making threats against Spain. Because, you know, if you don't bless Israel, then Israel will flood your country with migrants. I think that's how the saying goes. I think that's in Genesis somewhere. I think it says those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who don't bless Israel will suddenly experience massive rainstorms and a gigantic flood of Muslims from a bunch of NGOs, and you'll suddenly find you're, you know, collapsing under the weight of somebody else's humanitarianism. Really incredible. Of course, not in any way the only instance of this happening. Once again, this is all following the pronouncement by the socialist president of Spain that he'd be basically giving amnesty to anybody who could cross the border, starting off with, you know, a small, modest amount of something like 400,000 people. That, of course, inspiring an influx of upwards of a million people who apparently all qualify somehow. Now there's this new influx of hundreds of thousands all at once in a single day, almost as like insult on top of injury, like doing it right in your face when they could do it in a much more subtle and effective way. The demoralization and humiliation is certainly part of it. So you've got the rushing of the Spanish border from Morocco. Obviously, you have the small boats and the dinghies crossing the Mediterranean from Libya continually for the last decade at least, with many NGOs running out of Malta or Italy, where they go and pick up the migrants just off the coast of Tripoli and bring them into the EU and let them loose. And you've got the agreements being made now with European countries to allow hundreds of thousands of Indians to go, you know, shore up their population because the European people have been subjected to a systematic demoralization and bankruptcy campaign, which means they can't afford or physically have children. So they're dying out and being replaced by people without a historical heritage of liberty, rebellion, individuality, but rather are Muslims who take orders from their local imam every Friday, who they have to treat like the actual mouth of God. It's not, you know, these are all drops in the bucket. Meanwhile, more than 750 migrants cross the British Channel, the crossing between Calais and England. In 2026, daily record, most in a single day all year. Britain's government said Thursday 752 migrants were detected arriving in small boats across the channel the previous day, a daily record for this year. The figure, released by the Interior Ministry, broke a previous 2026 record set in June of 710 arrivals in a single day. The issue of tens of thousands of irregular migrants arriving in small boats each year has vexed successive British governments and fueled support for the hard right Reform UK party led by Nigel Farage. You gotta wonder what they mean when they say that. The issue of tens of thousands of irregular migrants, okay, it's one way of putting it, arriving in small boats has vexed successive British governments. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean, vexed? You mean the British governments that literally are planting these people by the thousands in tiny towns all over England? You mean the English government that has set up the intake pipeline to give these people homes and import their families? What do you mean it has vexed them? That's a crazy thing to say. It's like saying I was vexed by the restaurant when my order arrived. You know, it's like, no, it's what you ordered. Why would you be vexed by that? It's what you want. It's what you're doing on purpose. How could you be? You're not vexed by this. That's the wrong word, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's like the candidate was vexed that everybody was voting for him. It's like you have spent years creating this exact situation. If you were vexed by something, you would try to stop it. And in the case of a bunch of literal rubber dinghies full of people that don't know how to swim, that's not a hard problem to solve. I'm here to tell you right now, if you were actually vexed by that, you would do something to stop it. What's vexing them is that the vast, overwhelming majority of the people in the UK don't want their government to flood them out of existence with a bunch of hostile foreigners. That's what's vexing them. The thing that's vexing them is that the British people, the European people, aren't just quietly submitting to their preordained eradication from the face of the earth. That's very vexing to them. Be much less vexatious if you would just roll over and die and let 10 billion Muslims from Algeria take over everything that your ancestors built. The number of migrants crossing the channel fell by 41% in the first half of 2026 compared to the same period in the previous years, according to Interior Ministry figures. But, you know, at a certain point, like, what are we doing here? I mean, I know this has sort of been the case for a while, but that's kind of the issue, isn't it? This has been the case for a very, very, very long time. Like a very long time. Like, I went to Europe, must have been 2012, 2013, 14, something like that. Even then, I went to Frankfurt, and it was nothing but Muslim people. In Frankfurt, in the middle of downtown Frankfurt, it was hordes, crowds, endless sea of hijabs, and Muslim people literally, like, wearing boards that say, like, read the Quran, and are just, like, yelling at everybody. That was before anybody knew about the migrant crisis. So, God only knows how bad it is now. I mean, that was before it was opened up fully. That was before the Syrian civil war really kicked off and got all those people, you know, flooded in. It was before all of that. And yet already then, you know, major German cities were overwhelmed. So you got to wonder, after a decade of continual daily importation of hundreds of thousands of adult men into these places in Europe, I was about to say, when is enough going to be enough? But I think it might already be past that. Like, could you kick out Muslim? Like, let's just fantasize real quick that the King of England dies. God rest his soul. The new King of England, you know, is crowned. And let's just pretend he is like a based patriot and says, I'm the king now. As king, I want all these Muslims out of my kingdom immediately. You think that would work? You think they'd do it? Do you think the people under him would even follow those orders? If they did, do you think the Muslims would go quietly? If they didn't go quietly, do you think they would physically fight to remain? If they did physically fight to remain, do you think that the European armies would be capable of fighting back and ousting them? I mean, how many stories have we covered about raids on mosques all over Europe where they find massive caches of like 10,000 AK-47s and hundreds of thousands of bullets? I mean, these things are just stashed away all over Europe. It's almost weird because, you know, mosques all over Europe and in America, unlike many places in the Middle East, they're built a lot like fortresses. They have very high walls. They have barbed wire on them. We know that in Europe, a lot of these mosques are treated as weapon caches and ammunition depots. It's almost like, oh, do you think somebody's going to fight you? Did you think that you would need to fight for this at some point? You don't need to. Like, eventually, it's going to be like 20 years from now. They're going to be like, do we still keep these guns? Like, why do we need them? We conquered. We won. We don't even need the guns anymore. They're never even going to have to use them because Europe is not standing up to the invasion. So, you know, they're going to die out unless somebody does something about it. But you can't do anything about it because the only country that has national borders is Israel. It's the only one. It's the only one that's allowed.
And a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite, and once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Welcome back, folks. Talking about the onslaught, the attack, the invasion, the worldwide civil war. I gotta say, So yesterday, my son is 5 years old, completely obsessed with war. I mean, he doesn't really know what war is, but guns, weapons, like, it's crazy. Obsessed. Completely. He has like a little like Kentucky rifle, you know, Davy Crockett style rifle, and he just wants to carry it around everywhere. My wife is like, I don't know if it's good that like our 5 year old is so obsessed with guns. I'm like, there's literally nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. It's like you show him sports, he's not interested. Like, it's just like, oh, guns, weapons, military, this is awesome. We're talking about this, and I'm like, look, I don't necessarily want to foster like an obsession with guns or anything. But when it's an obsession with Daniel Boone, absolutely. When it's an obsession with, you know, pioneer history, of course we're going to foster that. But it's like, you know, a lot of the people that we're friends with, like pretty much all the people that we're friends with, like they don't even let their kids have any weapons ever. Like when I was growing up, there's, you know, that's all you did. Like all you did was you had guns and ran around, you know, playing pretend war every day, all day. That's what you did. It was normal to me. Now it's not quite as normal, and it's seen as, you know, kind of upsetting to other parents. And I have to kind of be like, look, I don't want to black pill too hard. This might be a little bit doomer-ish of me, but I'm completely serious when I say if nothing changes, it's kind of inevitable. Like, there's no small chance that our son's going to have to actually fight in a war during his life. Like, it's almost inevitable. And like, as much as that sucks, look around the world. Look at what's happening. I have to explain, like, you know, right now, as we speak, there are men being thrown into vans in Ukraine to be sent off to die in the front lines as they're immediately replaced with a shipment of Indians to take over their jobs. That's happening right now in Ukraine. There is no guarantee that that doesn't start happening in Europe. And it seems as though all of the preparations are being laid. Obviously, that's a big story this week of the United States preparing for invoking the draft and hauling people away. And like, obviously, my son's not going to die for Israel overseas. If and when that eventuality manifests, it's gonna be a life or death struggle. It might get pretty dangerous pretty soon. If, like, best case scenario on the current trajectory, by the time my son is my age, what percentage of America will be white people? So my son is going to, by the time he'll be a despised minority in a probably communist hellhole. Once again, we are on the path of Rhodesia. We are on the path of South Africa. Like, this is just happening. It's inevitable. It's demographic. And it's explicit from the people that are doing it. It's like the Mamdanis out there that are just like, we are going to take wealth from white people and give it to non-white people. Okay. At a certain point, that's either going to result in the full-fledged takeover of everything by people who literally despise us because of the lies they've been told, or you're going to have to, like, fight to stop the communists from taking all your stuff. As, like, blackpilling as this is, this is what's happening. Like, this is inevitable. There's no other outcome from the current trajectory. Am I wrong? Like, is there going to be an England in 50 years? Is there going to be a Spain in 50 years? Is there going to be an America in 50 years? If it even exists, is it going to be recognizable at all to the America that we now live in? Of course, the upsetting and annoying thing is how easy it would be to get us back on the right track. I genuinely wish that we didn't have to worry about any of this. The ideal, you know, government structure is just you do not have to worry about it. You don't have to think about it because your government ideally, you know, ostensibly shouldn't be actively involved in your wholesale physical destruction, but they are. But that's all they do, actually. That is their main, primary, and, you know, to a certain degree, exclusive concern is how do they import as many people as possible? How do they give away as many American jobs as possible? How do they offshore as many American companies as possible? How do they replace a population that doesn't want, you know, to see their Bill of Rights, God-given freedoms destroyed? How do you replace them with people who are actually clamoring for that? I don't know how much longer we have. Like, I genuinely don't. And there's something so frustrating about literally every single day, waking up to literally every single Western country being subjected to yet another or a continuation of these plots to demographically overwhelm us and just destroy us. Like, it is genuinely, I'm so confused. I'm so confused at what everybody else is paying attention to and looking at and doing. Like, I go to these places. You go to a nice neighborhood, go to Lakeway in Austin, go to Seaside in Florida, and it's, you know, houses as far as the eye can see, tens of thousands of houses, 99% of them are white. They all are clearly unbelievably wealthy, right? You drive through some of these neighborhoods and it's like the boat in the garage and the, you know, little Kawasaki mule that I know costs $25,000 and gets ridden, you know, once a month. You know, it's like there's so much wealth, there's so much prosperity, there's so much power in this collective population, and it's just like, do none of them care? Does nobody care that all of this is like slated for destruction? It's going to be destroyed. It's all going to be destroyed. And all of the people who could very easily stand up and stop it just aren't. Just don't know it's happening, don't care it's happening, get uncomfortable when it's happening. If you ask them, they kind of like that it's happening, actually. I don't get it. I don't understand why everyone is like this. Certainly seems to be the case, though. Again, not to black pill too hard here, but like, am I the crazy one? Am I the crazy one sitting here going to like the 5-year-old son? I'm like, look, I'd rather him be a little bit too aggressive than be yet another video spread on X where he's standing there with his hands in his pockets, surrounded by like black dudes twice his age before he, you know, gets his head cracked on the bathroom tile. Like, do we understand the world that we're entering into? Do we know what it's like to be a minority? And, you know, you think about it and it's like a generation back, like our parents grew up in a household where the dad had been to war, had been overseas killing people with a gun and then come back. Like, this idea that we're past war, it's a complete delusion. We are in a very, very brief window of peace that is very unique and sort of unprecedented in world history and is going to end pretty soon. You know? Do you know what I'm saying? Do you see what I'm saying? And it's like, okay, here we are concerned that like our kids are being introduced to, you know, maybe they see a violent movie or maybe they, you know, see something they shouldn't see on the news. And it's like, you understand that for all of time, kids grew up with like physical combat being a fact of life. People that settled the frontier, it wasn't a matter of playing cowboys and Indians. It was a matter of, if dad doesn't have his gun, the Indians will kill us. They will scalp us and kill us. Or, you know, I mean, every generation basically had a war until ours. But this idea that like war is just this thing that it's out there. It's like over there, the guns are and the people shoot. We don't do that here. It's like, oh, not for now, but like, there's no guarantee that it stays that way. People are operating in an illusion of permanency, you know, an illusion of normalcy, that this situation is going to go on forever while you can look around and see that it is actively being torn down on every front. So again, if we could change the trajectory, I'd love not to have to worry about any of this stuff. You know, if you had a government that was just like, you do you, I'm going to protect the border. It's like, great. That's literally all you need to do. That's it. Just, you know, protect the border, keep other people out. We're fine. You know, I get along with my neighbors. We get along with each other. And everybody sort of knows how to do what they're doing. We don't need the government in there. Yeah, we could stand to be a little bit more like 300. We could stand to be a little bit more like that. And here's the funny thing to me. You know what really blackpilled me? This is the perfect clip to play. This is 100% exactly what I've been thinking about. Because what really blackpilled me was going to see The Odyssey. I went to see The Odyssey. It's so bad, I can't even explain it. Like, it was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Every part of it was worse than the last. Truly an awful, god-awful piece of trash, worthless, amoral, libtard nonsense, bullcrap, gray nothingness of a film. It was so bad. And it was one of those things where I was just like, we'd been hearing so much about The Odyssey, and I knew it wasn't going to be good. I knew because of the casting choices, you know, they had different priorities in making the movie than actually making a good story and telling a good movie. But I'd seen so many people praise it and like talk about it, and then you watch it, and it's like, people actually like this? People actually think this was not just good, but something other than absolute hogwash trash? What is wrong with everybody? What is wrong with everyone? So I don't, you know, I could spend the entire 3 hours of this show on The Odyssey. It was, I mean, y'all, do you want to hear a quote from The Odyssey? I memorized this one. So after Odysseus hears the siren song, and everybody else has their ears closed, they say, "What did the siren song sound like?" Matt Damon, as Odysseus, says this. He says, "It sounds like the thing you want the most, and the thing you want the most is the thing you most can't have, and the thing you most can't have is the thing that you lost." This is one of these, like, you know, Nolan always has these sort of like kind of weird dialogue sections that like don't feel like the rest of the movie, but usually they're like kind of weird. They don't always work, but sometimes they work, right? They're quotes from Nolan movies, and they usually are like one of these types of scenes, like the scene from Batman where, you know, he gives the monologue about some people just want to watch the world burn, you know, and it's like, whoa, that's powerful. And even though it's kind of crazy and it's kind of doesn't fit in the rest of the movie, it like stands out. And it's real. And this was like one, you could tell it was like, this is one of those lines. This is supposed to be like really profound. The thing you most can't have. The thing you most can't have. Like, I just sat there repeating that in my head going, what? That's not right. I mean, is that right? That's not right, is it? The thing you most can't have? Is that the way those words are supposed to be used? Like, that's the level of dialogue we're talking about here. And the best comparison you could possibly make is between The Odyssey and 300. Because 300 is one of the best films of all time. It nailed it on every front. Because what you see in The Odyssey is you see true Bronze Age morals. You see, like, yeah, this is who these people are. This is what they believe. And so the comparison between like the wife, all the things you want it to be, then all the things you wish you never wished for. It was the delicious itch you go to scratch, but find it's under the skin. You can't reach it. So the delicious itch becomes unbearable. Told you what you most want is what you most can't have. And what you most can't have is what you already had and lost. Oh, wow. I mean, it's like, that's the movie that everybody's saying is the best movie in the world? That's the monologue from the Best Picture winner? I was just like, oh my God, everybody's retarded. I came out of the movie just being like, what is going on here? Because I'll explain, like, in 300... You know, I mean, we talked about it a lot. The wife in 300 is like the greatest character of all time. The scene when, like, they say goodbye and it's like so powerful. Or the scene when they, you know, this scene, when he kicks the guy into the well. What happens right before that, right? He turns to the wife and the wife gives him the little nod, gives him the little chin up, do it. Kick him down the well, kick his ass. And when they say goodbye, it's this emotional, it's this, you know, this is the last time we'll see each other. You are going to die. You're going off to die. And I approve. And you have to. And it's worth it. And it's not even a question, really. Then you watch The Odyssey. The, like, one of the opening scenes, is Penelope, the wife, being like, but why do you have to go? Let's just get in a boat and sail away west. And it's just like, what are you talking about? If this was really the Bronze Age, you know what that type of question, you know what the response is? You get thrown in the ocean. We're going to throw you off a cliff into the sea, lady. You are no longer queen. What the hell are you talking about? Run away. Have you never heard of honor? Like, it's this thing where you've got these liberals who I genuinely think they don't understand, like, what honor is. Like, it's very confusing to them. And so they have to try to, like, put it in a framework that they understand. And it makes it incomprehensible, incoherent, utter nonsense. I'm not going to spend all 3 hours on it, but my God, I could spend the first hour on the moral incoherence, the second hour on just the abject failure to just make an entertaining movie. There is no joy in the entire movie. There is no triumph in the entire movie. There is no emotion in the entire movie. The worst part of the movie was absolutely the casting. It had nothing to do with Helen of Troy being black. Honestly, that was the least offensive casting choice in the entire movie. Like, she's in it for like 2 minutes. You hardly see her. It's just like, it doesn't really matter. He's just like, this is my wife, Helen of Troy. And she's just like, hello. And then that's it. That doesn't bother me. Like, who cares? Who cares? I would have chosen someone different, but it didn't impact the movie or anything. The thing that took you out of it was Odysseus's like small little cabal of men were as diverse as your local high school. I mean, it was like you got the black guy, the Indian guy, the whatever, and they're all sitting there going, we are Greeks, but we are Greeks and we live this way. And it was like every time it showed his companions, it just took you out of it because it was just like, this isn't a family. This isn't a group. This isn't a nation of people that are, you know, fighting to get back home. This is a bunch of people from all over the place. I don't know what they have to do with each other. I don't know why they're on the same team. It doesn't make any sense. You know, if it was a black remake of The Odyssey and they were all black, I wouldn't have had an issue with that. It's the fact that it's just like, so who are these people? All these people are from Ithaca, are they? The Indian guy, he's from Ithaca, is he? It just completely takes you out of it. Calypso, the seductress, the, like, goddess woman, Charlize Theron, who's, like, 60 years old and looks plastic. She has obvious plastic surgery. How are you supposed to, like, get lost in a film about the Bronze Age when the woman's got her freaking nose tapped up and her, it's like, what is this? It's so baffling. It was so bad. But it's crazy stuff. The whole thing. Odysseus has like PTSD about winning the Trojan War. And it's just like, these guys didn't have PTSD about winning a war. What the hell are you talking about? Everything you've heard about it from the right wing is absolutely true. It is the boomer fantasy. It is a Vietnam flick about the PTSD of a boomer. But this is like the reason it really just like made me go insane is the incoherence was like the character, like Odysseus is like racked by guilt because he won the Trojan War. Okay. He didn't do anything wrong. He had a glorious triumph. He won the victory. He tricked the bad guys with a brilliant nom de guerre or a ruse de guerre. He's guilty about that. He's guilty about something where he didn't do anything wrong. Meanwhile, there's another scene where I won't spoil it, but he does something just unbelievably stupid for no reason. Even the characters in the movie. I really don't want to spoil it, but I could. He basically, there's a big monster and he just shoots the monster with an arrow. Everybody's escaped. They're getting away. Dude turns around and shoots an arrow at the monster, alerting him and like his men get killed. Later, the characters in the movie turn to Odysseus and are like, why did you do that? Why did you shoot that arrow? Odysseus, that was stupid. Which it's like, yeah, it was. It's funny that the characters pointed out. And Odysseus defends it. He's like, well, we had to get revenge for those guys. And this is what I mean. It's like, you're watching this movie and the whole thing is like this. The characters feel guilty when they didn't do anything wrong and then defend the thing that they did wrong that made no sense and was horrible. And it's like, so it's not like they took the Bronze Age morality and then made it modern. except that I guess modern morality is just nothing. It's just totally unmoored. It's just incomprehensible, completely incoherent, guilty about things they didn't do, not guilty about things they did do. What are we doing? They say Zeus's law. Do you know what they say Zeus's law is in this movie? I don't know why nobody said this before. The whole movie is about this concept of Zeus's law. In ancient cultures, there was a law. You can call it Zeus's law. You can call it the law of hospitality. But it was that you're supposed to treat strangers well. If a stranger came to your home and asked for respite, you're supposed to give them food, not necessarily question who they are. And the idea was because it could be a god in disguise. So you don't want to turn away some man that turns out to be Zeus and get all your sheep hit by lightning or something. So that's what the law actually was. But it was reciprocal, you understand. Like in this movie, it's like they're like, oh, Zeus's law means you can't kick out these people. And it's like, you think Zeus's law was that you had to endlessly serve guests, but guests had absolutely no obligations to you. The guests could do whatever the hell they want. The guests can stay as long as they want and lie to you and steal your stuff, and you can never kick them out. What are you talking about? If the host has responsibilities, so does the guest. But it's that type of thing. So that's what the actual law is, that you're supposed to take care of strangers. In this, it was warped and manipulated and changed and totally, again, incoherent. It's like it applies here, but not over here. They said that Zeus's law is treat others as you like to be treated. That's Jesus Christ's law. Do they not know this? Have they never read the Bible? Jesus Christ came up with that. Christopher Nolan is giving an interview where he's like, the Greeks had this idea of treat others as you like to be treated, and that was the foundation of their society, and we don't really have a foundation like that to ours. It's like, what are you talking about? It's so crazy. So it's this weird, like, treat others as you like to be treated, but also, if they abuse you, you just have to take it. And this is where it gets really baffling. The whole thing is like, Odysseus is like racked with guilt because the Trojan horse, Rustiger, somehow violated Zeus's law because he gave him a gift that, and it's like, that's not a violation of Zeus's law in any way whatsoever. That's warfare. You're allowed to engage in war. The breaking of Zeus's law is the fact that Paris stole Helen from Menelaus while he was a guest of Menelaus. So it's this thing where they take something that is embedded in the story as a reason for going to war in the first place and a sense of honor and all this. It strips it all of that and it tries to reapply it, but in a totally baffling way. And you watch this and you just go, is this the world we live in? It makes no sense. It is not just not entertaining. It wasn't fun. It wasn't beautiful. It didn't look real. It didn't look authentic. There was just nothing. And then you walk out and it's people going, this is the best movie I've ever seen. You're like, we all need to die.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the ship and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now and get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
If you think that a Bill of Rights is what sets us apart, you're crazy. Every banana republic in the world has a Bill of Rights. Every president for life has a Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights of the former evil empire, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, was much better than ours. I mean it literally. It was much better. We guarantee freedom of speech and of the press. Big deal. They guaranteed freedom of speech, of the press, of street demonstrations and protests, and anyone who is caught trying to suppress criticism of the government will be called to account. Whoa, that is wonderful stuff. Of course. Just words on paper. What our framers would have called a parchment guarantee. And the reason is that the real constitution of the Soviet Union, you think of the word constitution, it doesn't mean a bill, it means structure. Say a person has a sound constitution, has a sound structure. The real constitution of the Soviet Union, which is what our framers debated that whole summer in Philadelphia in 1787. They didn't talk about the Bill of Rights. That was an afterthought, wasn't it? That constitution of the Soviet Union did not prevent the centralization of power in one person or in one party. And when that happens, the game is over. The Bill of Rights is just what our framers would call a parchment guarantee. So the real key to the distinctiveness of America is the structure of our government. One part of it, of course, is the independence of the judiciary. But there's a lot more. There are very few countries in the world, for example, that have a bicameral legislature. Oh, England has a House of Lords for the time being, but the House of Lords has no substantial power. They can just make the Commons pass a bill a second time. France has a Senate. It's honorific. Italy has a Senate. It's honorific. Very few countries have two separate bodies in the legislature equally powerful. That's a lot of trouble, as you gentlemen doubtless know, to get the same language through two different bodies elected in a different fashion. Very few countries in the world have a separately elected chief executive. Sometimes I go to Europe to talk about separation of powers. And when I get there, I find that all I'm talking about is independence of the judiciary. Because the Europeans don't even try to divide the two political powers, the two political branches, the legislature and the chief executive. In all of the parliamentary countries, the chief executive is the creature of the legislature. There's never any disagreement between them and the prime minister, as there is sometimes between you and the president. When there's a disagreement, they just kick him out. They have a no-confidence vote, a new election, and they get a prime minister who agrees with the legislature. And, you know, the Europeans look at this system and they say, well, it passes one house, it doesn't pass the other house. Sometimes the other house is in the control of a different party. It passes both, and then this president who has a veto power vetoes it, and they look at this and they say, it is gridlock. And I hear Americans saying this nowadays, and there's a lot of it going around. They talk about a dysfunctional government. Because there's disagreement and the framers would have said, yes, that's exactly the way we set it up. We wanted this to be power, contradicting power, because the main ill that beset us, as Hamilton said in The Federalist, when he talked about a separate Senate, he said, yes, it seems inconvenient, but inasmuch as the main ill that besets us is an excess of legislation, it won't be so bad. This is 1787. He didn't know what an excess of legislation was. So unless Americans can appreciate that and learn to love the separation of powers, which means learning to love the gridlock, which the framers believed would be the main protection of minorities, the main protection. If a bill is about to pass that really comes down hard on some minority, they think it's terribly unfair, It doesn't take much to throw a monkey wrench into this complex system. So Americans should appreciate that, and they should learn to love the gridlock. It's there for a reason, so that the legislation that gets out will be good legislation.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to welcome my guest, Adam Johnson. You probably know him as the Lectern Guy. Adam Johnson is an author, carpenter, husband, and father of five, and he's currently running for Manatee County Commissioner. You can follow him on X at Lectern Leader. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, glad to be back on with you.
Well, I'm happy to have you, and I got to be, well, there's a couple things. First of all, you may be the perfect guest for me personally right now, because I'm pretty black-pilled, Adam. I have to admit, the way things are going, I'm like so hopeless. I'm like looking at my 5-year-old son being like, you're gonna have to fight in a war one day. Like I'm so hopeless. Maybe you can give me some hope here, Adam, because I know that you're running for county commissioner, and I gotta be honest, I didn't know what you were running for or where you were running, but I saw your signs, the sign saga, and I know you're a good guy, and we need more people on our side, people like you, running for offices all over, local, national, wherever. So I thought we got to get Adam on to talk about his race and hopefully give me some hope that there's something in this system that can be rescued. So tell us, what are you running for, and where are you running? How can people vote and support you?
This is Manatee County Commissioner. It's the meat and potatoes of local government. It's your roads. It's your taxes. It's where we're spending them. It's the federal government. The money gets kind of lost along the way. Very hard to track down. But local government's very easy to see where it's going. So I'm running to make sure that the local taxes we're bringing in go to public safety, go to road building, go to development that we actually agree with and need. So you can find my website if you feel like donating. It's voteadamjohnson.com. But we're doing the work. We've been knocking doors every single day. We're north of 4,000 doors. We're phone banking. We're doing all the stuff necessary. As far as your hope question goes, you know, I've had a time or two where things were down. And, you know, my hope is in the Lord Jesus Christ and what he did for me primarily. And that is where I start every single day. And then I look downward from that. My hope is that my marriage is successful, and it is. We love each other. We're 15 years married now. My next hope is that my kids are being raised right, and I'm in charge of these things. So I consider this, your hope should be a concentric circle of design of I'm placing my hope in the things that I can't change. First of all, Christ did what he did for us, and that should make us hopeful every single day that we have a purpose here. Moving down from that, those are our little, you know, circles of I'm taking care of my family. So when we keep working down into politics, which should be like, you know, seventh or eighth, you know, rung on the ladder, how am I still hopeful there? I can tell you it's because I love where I live. I still love my country. I still love my neighbors. I still love the people that surround me. And if I can make a little bit of change running for a local office, that's what I'm going to do. I'm hopeful that the little bit of change that I can do makes a big impact in the world. And if more people got on the ground, got their hands dirty and got involved, I think we could change it from the bottom up.
Absolutely. I do believe that. And I have evidence for that, actually. We can go to DocCam here, because when you talk about local, I mean, this is where the rubber hits the road. And, you know, it's kind of a talking point as well. All politics are local. But, like, take a look at this. This is homicide change. So the change in the rate of homicide in Texas cities from 2019 to 2026. Austin is up 74%. Every other one is down. Houston, San Antonio, and these are big crime-ridden cities. I mean, Houston is a.
I've been.
Yes, it's extremely dangerous. Well, it was down 8%. San Antonio down 12%. So this massive rise, this, you know, God only knows how many number of dead people, you know, as a result of homicide, including our friend Jamie White. This is the result of local elections. This is the result of getting bad people in local offices who don't want to enforce the law, don't want to do what they're supposed to. This has tangible results. So, you know, we talk about local being, you know, having outsized impact. Absolutely. It sounds like you're really building a sort of maybe a little nascent political machine there. What advice would you have for people that wanted to run themselves? Like, how'd you get started? How do you get people around you to volunteer and all that stuff? I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Well, how I got started up, I don't recommend getting arrested and going to prison.
That's a good start.
But it definitely is it's definitely a jumping off point if you want to start there. I don't encourage those things. But you should show up to your local county commission meetings. You should. You should be there if you're retired, if you have time off. Show up, see what they're voting on, seeing where they're putting your local tax dollars. You know, when we're looking at the people who are elected, it was Austin. I've been to all of those cities listed. I'm in Texas like five or six times a year. It's my second home. Austin, San Antonio, these places, you know, I stayed on, what is it? Seventh Street or Fifth Street? What's the one with Joe Rogan's mothership?
Sixth Street.
Is it Sixth Street?
That's Sixth
Street.
One.
I stayed there. I carry everywhere, like everywhere. Yeah. 7 o'clock in the morning, I wake up to get breakfast. I didn't feel comfortable walking down the main drag.
Right.
I was staying on there. And this is, I travel cities all the time. It is terrible there. But you look at the county commissioner budgets, the second line item next to the debt they're paying off because all these counties are taking loans is typically the county sheriff's office. So the selective enforcement, what's being enforced and not enforced, you should get involved. You should read how much money your county sheriffs are getting and find out who your sheriff is, because there are two positions of local government that can have more impact in your life than anyone else. It's your county commission and it's your sheriff's officer. So find out who your sheriff is, start a campaign against him. And you might get a couple of door knocks. You might get some people who are mad at you. But if you're dealing with murder rates like that, what choice do you have but to get involved and say something and do something?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, now we have like flock cameras going up everywhere and surveillance, and it's like, it's not going to help if you don't prosecute the people. I mean, all it's going to do is deliver you high definition footage of the crime being committed over and over again. So unless you have the prosecutors, unless you have the people actually doing the job, the cops to go arrest them, the sheriffs to go arrest them, and the prosecutors to put them in jail, you know, the surveillance doesn't help. So it's like we're coming up with new solutions when we have very, very basic solutions that we just aren't implementing. And of course it you know, causes problems all over the place. So I guess, not everybody can go to jail and become a national hero like yourself, but that's a very good start. What else, you know, are you going to be trying to focus on locally that has an impact on people's lives? Crime, tax usage, cool. Like where do you think the biggest impact is?
The two biggest things that I was running on was I wanted a moratorium on data centers. And so we figured out how we're going to pay for the infrastructure to bring them in. I personally don't like them. They're not job heavy for the actual residents who live here. The second thing was essential services. EMS in the state of Florida is not considered essential. So when we have shutdowns, they're not getting paid. They're working their butts off. They're helping people. They're saving lives and they weren't getting paid. Both of those things just passed at the county commission meeting this week. So not going to say I'm responsible for that, but I've been very loud about that. So moving forward, we have a property tax bill that's coming in Florida to lower your property taxes by, it's not negligible, but it's not enough. While I encourage all property, all tax bills to put money back in your pocket, we're going to see a housing boom again. And my concern is that Florida is going to turn out like Texas has turned out. It's a bipartisan bill. And when you make bipartisan bills, you bring in bipartisan people, which is reds and blues. We've been a swing state forever. I am deeply concerned of what this bill does to Florida. We have I think it's over 1 million new registered Republican voters in Florida alone after COVID. And we became a forever red state. This bill passes and it's going to. We're going to become a swing state again. So I have deep concerns, deep issues about it, how it was written. People are going to pay to get money back in their wallets. They need relief because, you know, the cost of living is so astronomical right now. But what are we going to do about this? I think we talk about, you know, tightening our belts. I think we talk about making sure that we're spending money not on vanity projects. We need people projects, not pet projects.
Mm. That'd be a good start. That'd be a very good start. And you know, what you said before where it's like, I have this weird, it's not nostalgia, but it's a weird sort of feeling where it's like, you know, you look around. I go to small town Texas and it's like, this is the most beautiful thing ever. There's American flags everywhere. It's gardens and pets. And I mean, it's beautiful. And then I just see this storm cloud over and I want to just go, what are y'all doing? Don't you realize this is all going away? Am I too black pilled? Am I too doomer pilled right now? Because I feel like we have all this potential. We have all this power. We have all this, you know, like incredible people. And they just don't know. They just don't know they're being attacked. They don't know they're being robbed. They just think, well, things are, you know, continuing on as normal. I'm like, guys, this party's going to come to an end and you all can get active and get involved and then the party can keep going, but you got to get involved. I don't see people getting involved. So as I see the beauty and the love of, you know, my neighbors, you know, where I live and my family and all that, it's like tinted with this, like, sadness of like, and you are all blind to what's happening and I can't wake you up. As hard as I try, you refuse to wake up. How do we deal with it? I'm just venting at you like you're my therapist, but I mean, this is politically, this is how I feel right now.
This is Deep Ellum in Dallas. Like, Deep Ellum was a great place for a long time. Now we have, you know, a lot of crime down there and it needs to be fixed. I think anytime you address a wound, an injury, something that is wrong in the senses of people's minds in the community, you have to look at how it happened, what happened, and how we got here is very simple. There was a generation who sold this idea. If we are polite by not bringing up politics and, you know, our Christian values at the dinner table, at holidays, at our work, you know, even in church, if we don't bring up our political ideals, our, you know, what morally drives us, we're selling it to ourselves like we are, you know, we're being polite people. Mm. And in doing that, the communists got to win because they had no problem being rude in your face and shoving garbage rhetoric down our throats every step of the way. And when it didn't work on adults, you know where they went? They went after the children. Look at the public schools and what's happened to our past two generations and what they believe in. I saw a study, 20% of the youngest generation are democratic socialists now. Yeah. Like, wrap your head around that. So I think if we are looking at this, we have to admit what happened. We were cowards and sold it to ourselves as politeness. You want to fix things moving forward? Stop being silent. You hear someone spouting off at the mouth, some, you know, communist gobbledygook, you tell them, no, we're done.
Okay.
We're not doing that. That's a lie.
How do we, let's coach people. Cause I have this problem too. I do the same thing. I'm guilty of this as well. I'm in a group. I hear somebody say something crazy. I maybe roll my eyes and think, I can't wait to talk about this on the show, but I don't say anything. It's cause it's uncomfortable because that's the way we've, you know, sort of been trained at this point is, you know, if you bring up anything, they're going to start shouting at me. They're going to think I'm crazy. I better not. So, you know, occasionally, you know, and I think it used to be better at it. Since I do a show now, I sort of can just go, ooh, I'll talk about this later. You know, but back in the day, I used to kind of enjoy like breaking the mold like that. Do you have any like advice? If somebody's out there, they agree with you. Maybe they're in an office where somebody's always spouting off. How do you do that without becoming a pariah, without getting people hating you? I mean, that's the fear people have. How do you speak out confidently like that?
I adore the Socratic method. I ask questions. Well, how did you get there? What made you believe this thing? Did you read something somewhere? And then who said it? Is it a verifiable source? Is it something that you've personally seen in your life? These are all open-ended questions to allow someone to speak. And, you know, I love answering when someone says something that's absolutely ridiculous. I will respond to them. I want you to say that again slower so you hear the words coming out of your mouth. And then tell me when you're done saying it a second time if you truly do believe what you're saying. Because if you do, I would then like to encourage you to tell me how you got here.
Right.
And then it's an open dialogue. But most of these people, They lack, you've seen the NPC meme where they're swapping out the chips for the next thing.
Yeah.
These people, there's, cognitive dissonance is a real thing. And when you tell people that we're going to march forwards with this one thing and then you say, hey, now it's the exact opposite of that, they have cognitive dissonance. It's the NPC meme breaking down, right? And these people are vulnerable. They're not in the states of mental clarity. And if you just ask them questions that are simple questions, right? I never tell someone, hey, you're wrong, or hey, that's retarded. What I tell them is, how did you get here? I ask them questions instead, and they get there on their own. And the cognitive dissonance, it's more beautiful to watch than telling someone off and watching them storm away.
Yeah, and I get, and the defensive walls go up. You can't do both. You know, you might think you could do both. That's retarded. How did you get here? That doesn't work. You start the question.
No.
But, you know, maybe a great example of this would be the Fauci testimony from yesterday. This is one thing that I'm like, we didn't even fall for these lies. I never thought it came from a wet market. I never took the vaccine. It's the Democrats that were lied to, and they don't care. They're the ones defending the guy. This is where I'm like, how do we even talk to these people? It's like, he lied to you. Many of these people, they got the vaccine, they got sick, they, you know, ousted their family members and don't talk to them anymore because of masks. And it's like, no, he was lying to you that whole time, and here's the evidence, and they don't care. I don't know why they don't care. I shouldn't care because we didn't fall for the lies. Why do they fall for lies and then not even care that they fell for it and defend the liar? This is something that totally blows my mind.
Because it's the same population that heard about AIDS, and they said, no, it definitely came because someone diddled a monkey. And it's like, no, that's, it's no, no one ate a bat at a market and then caused an entire global pandemic. They believe the big lie because believing Occam's razor, where no, there are terrible people in the world and they do terrible things. Like they, again, it's the cognitive dissonance. They would rather believe it was a bat at a wet market and some guy, researcher diddling a monkey that caused these two things that still plague our communities. Like, no, it's what it is it's terrible people doing terrible things.
Right.
And the sooner we get to accepting that and acknowledging that, the sooner we actually move forward and start putting people in positions that have some freaking moral sensitivity, you know?
Yeah. So how do we get that? And how much time do we have? I mean, I've got a, poll here from CNN. Voters favor Democrats by an 8-point margin heading into the midterms. You're talking about, you know, if this thing passes in Florida, that could become sort of a swing state. In Texas, I believe the Democrat Senate candidate, Tyler Rico, is polling higher than the Republican right now. I mean, we're sort of up against an electoral tidal wave here. Do we even have time to reverse this, or are the midterms gone and we got to think longer? I mean, how do we deal with this swing towards socialism we're witnessing?
Well, I blame the GOP for not backing people like Paxton and Brandon O'Hara from the get-go. They're obviously the popular vote. They have people on the ground who support them. They don't have all these skeletons in their closet, you know. And I forget how much money the GOP spent on backing Cornyn. But, I mean, the guy, no one likes the guy. I don't know how he stays in office. This is the Lindsey Grahams, the Mitch McConnells.
Yeah.
But they control the money. And if you want to change these things, and I try not to doom pill too much. I look at people like Brandon Herrera winning his runoff. I look at people like Ken Paxton, you know, winning his primary. And I'm like, I think there's still hope. I think there's still some good people in the world who will show up. But how do we beat them long term? There is not a single politician that did not start from a local election and work their way up. The way you keep them accountable is you watch them throughout their careers and you keep them honest. The main issue is, and this is, people ask me why I'm running for local office. If I have started at a House seat or a Senate seat, even a state level, the money you have to take in to win one of those seats, you owe favors.
Mm.
People ask me, why aren't you endorsed by, you know, this local paper or this local organization? It's because I don't owe anyone favors and I refuse to owe anyone favors. I'm going to go in and I'm going to do what I think my constituents have asked me to do. And that's the job. That's the job. So if you want to fix things going forward, look at people who aren't taking dirty money. Look at people who aren't taking, you know, bribes and getting establishment, you know, endorsements. Look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to be more involved really than ever, because it's at the primary level. We can actually make those replacements within the party that are so necessary, because it's really not Republican and Democrat, is it? I mean, it really is. The deep state versus us. Can you talk a little bit on that and just is there room for a new party? Does there need to be a refurbishment of MAGA? Like, what do we do about the Republican Party these days that seems totally incapable or unwilling to do what we voted them into office to do?
Well, there is a third party. It's NPA, you know, and it's libertarians. And, you know, I think they scoop about 2% of the vote. It's not at the swing either left or right. And in local elections, when you have multiple candidates running within the same party, you end up splitting the election. You get ranked choice voting in some of these states and you end up getting never got elected. So I do believe it's best. The two party system probably is the best way through because you do need a majority. And the left has marching orders. They don't really have convictions. It's not like, you know, they get these individual ideas and that's what we're going to be voting for. No, they're told what they're voting for and who they're voting for. If you bifract the Republican Party, what you're going to get is a supermajority of Democrats across all states. And you'd have to be an accelerationist at that point. And I'm not a pacifist either. So definitely not that. I vote for people that I believe in. But if you're an accelerationist, I think you're asking for a third party because that's all that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm hardcore not an accelerationist. The accelerationists have this idea that you can bring upon a collapse and then rebuild something new. And it's like, if you look at history, things just degrade forever. You know, it's like, look at, South Africa would be one example. The USSR would be another. I mean, that thing lasted for 80 plus years with America, you know, fighting against it continuously. It could have lasted for a millennia if it didn't have that opposition. So, yeah, I think the accelerationism is a complete trick. I'm glad you're not supporting that either, obviously, since you're running for office. Again, my guest is Adam Johnson. You can follow him on X at Lectern Leader, and it's voteadamjohnson.com. He's running for Manatee County Commissioner. And again, just to close out here, give us your pitch on why they should elect you, what you're going to do, and also just how other people can follow in your footsteps. And, you know, I think this is a great place to start. The county level, that's like ideal. It's, you know, small enough that you can be a big fish in a small pond, but it's not, you know, so big that it's the full state. So, Adam Johnson, your pitch as to why you should be elected and why other people should run.
Well, I've spent the past 5 years doing the national podcast tour. I've been all over the U.S., and I learned that every national story is actually a local story to someone. It always lands in someone's backyard. It's always happened to someone at an individual level. And while I had a lot of fun, I met a lot of great people. Harrison, you're one of them. I realized that, you know, you have to get in there. You have to do something. It's not enough to complain online. So we decided to run for local office and with the hopes of not just fixing my backyard, but also encouraging others to get involved and do something. Before January 6th, I mean, I was just a guy who made barbecue on the weekends and hung out with my kids. I mean, I still am, you know, that's what we do every weekend. But, you know, we looked at this and we believe that everything can be used for the good, that God has great favor and those that he chooses to use. And he's chosen to use us. So we're running for this local office. As far as platforming, we're running on an acronym, FAST. It's F, fraud, waste, and abuse. We have a lot at a local level. We want to look into our books, dig through them, and make sure that we're making sure that the money that's being brought and spent efficiently and responsibly. The A, affordability and accountability. We can't change the value of the U.S. dollar as it diminishes year and year after again. What we can do is make sure that our millage rates are appropriate so we can get back money to people at a local level. The S is sustainability. We have rapid growth and development in Florida. And because we have such rapid development and growth, our infrastructure is lacking and falling behind. We are looking to not necessarily put a moratorium on building per se, but making sure that the county dollars we're bringing in from back fees are going towards the infrastructure to make sure that we are keeping people safe. And the T is traffic. If you know anything about you live in Texas, traffic's terrible here too. It's terrible everywhere. We want to make sure impact fees that are coming in are being spent to build roads and keep people safe.
Hey, you know what? Those sound like things that would actually help people and benefit people. What a novel idea for a politician. Thank you so much for being with us. Adam Johnson, the Lectern guy. Follow him on X at Lectern Leader and vote for him if you're in Manatee County.
Do you want to try some?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Roja, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. People just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically that Power Plant formula. If you're looking for something like Super Male Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. We've got the T3 Trifecta Iodine, the absolute staple of the old network. We've got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the Bovine Beef Tallow. It's got the Methylene Blue inside the tallow. Incredible antioxidant, Methylene Blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the Ultimate Power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins memorabilia that we have. Literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
I just want to watch 300. What if we just don't do the rest of the show and we just watch 300? That might actually be better. Maybe all of the discussion about the way the invasion's happening, maybe it would all be better served if we just watched, you know, a Hollywood example. The time this happened in the past. You know, there was a video essay I was watching one time on YouTube, and it was it was about 300. And the leftist YouTuber that's talking about it is like, you know, right wing chuds love 300 because it comports with their worldview of like the hostile, exotic outsider coming to kill you and take your women or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's what actually happened back then. What are you talking about? It's like the way he's presented it was like this fantasy of like a time when the big bad guy from another country was coming to take your women. And it's like, yeah, that's what happened. That's what warfare was about. They came and they took your stuff and they took your women. They took your cows and they killed you or they enslaved you and put you in a chain and sold you for money. That's what actually happened. So that's what I mean. The left is like actually living in some sort of delusional fantasy world where they think that like reality doesn't affect them or something. But no, that's what warfare was like back then. It's not a right-wing fantasy about the outside foreigners coming to take your women. That's how they got wives back then. It was pretty common, actually. We operate in a, we delude ourselves into thinking we're in a different world. We're not. It's just more complicated and frustrating. It's just more frustrating. You used to just be able to stab the guy with a sharp piece of metal. Now you have to run for office. Now you have to ask politely to be defended from the onrushing savages who aren't being fought by your king, but in fact imported by your king, who likes them more than you for some reason. Because everybody is insane. So yeah, we're going to talk more about the invasion of Europe and America and all white countries today, because it's a race thing. Y'all get that? Is that becoming clear yet? Not according to me, according to them. White people are under attack absolutely everywhere and in a concerted way. Let's go to clip number 36 now. Earlier today, hundreds of thousands of Muslim Africans fled into Spain. The response, by the way, from the Spanish president is to treat it like a humanitarian crisis, which is crazy. Let's go to 36. I'll explain his response on the other side.
Today is a great day for those of us who support open borders, as thousands of new arrivals make their way through the border of Spain from Morocco and Algeria. All of these people are finally joining us for a better life in the EU. And instead of being scared about what's happening, we should be celebrating that so many people want to make their home here in Europe. Many of these people might make their way to the UK, and if we come across them, we should greet them with open arms and solidarity with wanting a better life. One of the best things about having so many people arrive at once is the incredible boost to our GDP and economy, as well as new doctors and engineers, men, women and children of all ages can enrich our society and diversify our culture in new and exciting ways. Many nations like Spain and the UK are suffering from declining populations, but with this new influx of dreamers, we can help fill the labour shortage and increase our population artificially. Given that diversity is our greatest strength, this can only be a positive thing. And to the naysayers who say we'll need to build more houses or that it'll put pressure on infrastructure, the simple fact is we need to spend more money on those things anyway. And so more people puts more pressure on the government to spend more money so that we can all have better things.
I love that guy. I love that. You can't really tell, can you? I love that because it's like it's parody, but it's so close to the real thing. You really can't tell if he's serious. But yeah, that was a parody of the left-wing viewpoint, but like he doesn't go overboard, you know? Like I'd be tempted to be like, you know, talking about the rape gangs and stuff. If I was doing a parody like this, I'd be tempted to like, you know, go a little bit farther with it. But I kind of love that he just in a total straight face just is like, just says the left-wing talking points. And it's just like compared with the video of the literally thousands of hostile, angry adult men. It's ridiculous. But people believe that. Or they think this is some sort of humanitarian crisis. They think that these are desperate people fleeing, you know, impossible situations. They are literally on cell phones. They are all adult men. They can all fend for themselves. They're just breaking in to your country. So then you've got the president of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, responding to this invasion. Let's roll some of the clips again, just so people can remember, like, what we're dealing with, just the absolute onslaught, attack, invasion, infiltration that's going on. Because in response to this, Pedro Sanchez says, the government of Spain is fully committed to providing an immediate response to the situation in Ceuta. We are mobilizing all necessary resources, working with Moroccan and international authorities, and preparing the necessary measures to restore normalcy as soon as possible. I just conveyed this to the president of Morocco. This is the moment to build solutions with responsibility and cooperation. What are you talking? Like, okay, you have an invasion of Muslims. There's sort of two paths available to you at this point, I suppose. I think we could carve out a middle path. I think somewhere in between the Spanish response of we're deploying resources to normalize the situation, i.e. welcome the people in, i.e. this isn't even being treated as a problem necessarily, rather than just they need more resources to bring in the immigrants. Or I guess you could go the Israeli style, which is they invaded our country, therefore let's kill all of their children. Can there be a middle? Is there a middle ground? Is there a middle place that says this is an invasion, it's bad, you should stop it and send them back, you don't need to kill them all, and you don't need to welcome them all as quote-unquote refugees? Do we have to be idiots? Or do we have to be unmerciful? Can we not be sensible, normal human beings about all of this? Apparently not. Apparently these are our options. And actually, that first option is only for Israel. So our option is pay for all of their stuff. Like, to me, just imagining this on a individual level, this is the equivalent of like calling the cops because a gang of men have just broken into your home and stolen all your stuff, and getting the response like this would be kind of insane, wouldn't it? Like, wouldn't it be crazy if you called the cops and were like, there's a bunch of men that I don't know breaking into my home, and they were like, we are going to... So it sounds like there's a new situation. Sounds like you're in a new situation that we're all going to have to come to terms with, okay? You know? We are... The police, by the way, we're fully committed to providing an immediate response to this new situation that has developed. We will be immediately responding. It's like, okay, so you're sending men with guns to get the trespassers out? That's not really what we would have said that if that's what we meant. No, what we said was we are going to be providing an immediate response to the situation that's been provided. So we're going to give the robbers money. We're going to give the people that invaded your house, they now own the house, and you have to pay for it. Actually, you have to pay for them from now on. They live in your house. Your belongings belong to them now, but you are still responsible for feeding and housing and clothing them. Okay? So if we can understand how absurd that is on an individual level, why is it any less absurd on the national level? It's actually kind of more absurd. It's actually a little bit more absurd in some ways, because there's no ambiguity about this. This is just trusted. They're not even pretending to be refugees. This is the other kind of crazy part. They're not saying they're refugees. They're not claiming they're fleeing from war. I do have one video. It's not translated, so you can't understand it, but the translation I read earlier, the guy's like, I can't go back to Morocco because I'm implicated in a killing that occurred there. Like, he's not even pretending to be a refugee. He's admitting he's a fugitive from justice. And like, it doesn't matter. It's not like they're like, well, then you have to go home. They're like, okay, great. Then you get to stay. They're already breaking into people's houses. And some of this footage actually has women and children against all odds. The vast majority of footage is purely adult men because it's an invasion, because they're coming here for your wives and daughters. That's why. What, you think they're all gay? You think all these guys are gay or something? Is that what you're telling me? Is the left telling? Oh, they probably will all say they're gay. They're all, yeah. According to official statistics, These are all gay men fleeing from the oppressive anti-LGBT regime of Morocco. So, you know, they're asylum seekers because they're all gay. At least then they'd be gone in a generation. No, these are adult men. These are adult African, North African Muslim men that are coming to Europe for European women and your money. And because they were invited, and because the countries that they run, that are run by people like them, are hellhole trash compactors. So they're coming to the place that's nice, that has good morals and decent people, and they're coming to ruin it all for, I guess, the you know, moderate enjoyment of the destruction. You know what I mean? It's like that quote from the Camp of the Saints. It's like they will burn your beautiful wooden door just for the heat. It's like, well, you coming and destroying all this stuff means it's not going to be there for any longer. It's like, it's fine. They get to have fun during the destruction, and that's sort of as far ahead as they're thinking, apparently. But no, they're obviously a part of a giant, concerted, organized attack. This is what I mean about sort of the blackpilling and the nonsense. Like, every day is like this. Every day is like this. Every single day, there's another gigantic headline. You know, this is sort of more explosive than normal, but like I said, at the same time, they're breaking records for, you know, people getting into England in a single day. And every single day, it's a terrorist attack in Germany, it's a stabbing in France, it's a rape gang in England, it's an invasion in Spain, it's crossing the English Channel in dinghies every single day for years on end. And I feel a little bit like, you know, this would be a good skit. Me at the barbecue. This would be a good skit. I kind of blanked on it. Oh yeah. Like a news reporter in World War II, but nobody acknowledges that they're at war. Like, that's kind of how it feels. Is I have to get up here and be like, a German bombing run dropped bombs on a neighborhood in England because we're at war with Germany. It's everybody like, don't say that though. That's not true. That's a crazy conspiracy theory. England at war with Germany? That's crazy. Like, that's kind of how I feel, where I'm like, the war could not be more obvious. The attack, the purpose of the attack, the target of the attack could not be more obvious. This is how it feels to me, is like Winston Churchill getting up and going, we have been bombed by the Nazis. This is a new situation. We will deploy resources to try to determine how best to deal with the accidental bomb dropping, which we have to assume is an accident. There was some sort of mistake from the Germans. They did it again for the 100th time this year. They keep accidentally dropping bombs on us, and it's just terrible, but it doesn't make any sense. But that is how it feels. It feels like I have to wake up in the middle of a world war that has been declared, that is running, that is just happening right in front of everybody. And yet you flip through the channels and nobody says they're at war. Nobody admits they're at war. Everybody's pretending they're not at war. You walk down the lane in your English village, and there's a big crater where the building used to be. And you're like, this is new. When did this happen? And people are like, it's always been like this, actually. No, actually, our village has always bombed out craters. It's always been like this. It's our strength, actually. Bomb craters are our strength. Bomb craters are our strength, and you're anti-German if you notice. The bombs are people in this sort of metaphor I'm working out here. When you walk around your little English village, you know, like the little English village of population 350 that just received 1,200 adult male foreign migrants, you're supposed to act like you're not at war. You're supposed to sit there during the Blitz in your bomb shelter, hearing the explosions above you, and everybody around is going, this is normal and good. We're not at war. What do you mean war? These are refugee bombs. It doesn't make any sense, but that's the point, right? That's why I feel crazy every day I wake up to the report of the blitz of the bombing attack on our countryside. And then I'm the only one on television being like, this is a war, by the way. I can make you do a short film where it's like an alternative reality, World War II, during the Blitz, during the height of, you know, the battle over England. But it's like, but they don't say it's war. They won't admit that it's a war. You turn on BBC and it's like they report on the soccer game and they'll report on bombs dropping, but they'll act like they don't know where they're coming from. Like another mysterious explosion destroyed a church and, you know, it's crazy. It's genuinely crazy because it's what's happening now is like significantly more destructive than anything that happened during World War II. Like it sounds a little bit crazy to even imagine that, like, what do you know, if England was at war with the Nazis and there were bombing raids every night on England, but you turned on the TV in England, you know, it was just like another mysterious explosion destroyed a building. And, you know, people claim that there were airplanes heard overhead, but we have no confirmation of that. We think it may have just been a random explosion. And, you know, everything else is going normally. Shipping is down a little bit. Okay. You know, we're not doing quite as much international trade, but that's because some complicated things happening on the European continent that we don't have to worry about right now. So, you know, just keep your head down and keep working away. And wouldn't you feel crazy if you were the only person in England who was like, we are at war with Germany. Why does nobody recognize this? Why can nobody figure out that we are at war with Germany? Why is everybody acting like we're not at war? That's why I feel crazy, because we are at war and we're losing and we're losing really badly and have been for a while. And nobody else recognizes or admits we're at war. What the hell is going on? Do you need somebody to tell you? Do you need the news to tell you that bombs are falling on your head? Do you need the news to tell you that you don't understand your neighbors and don't recognize your hometown anymore? Do I need to inform you about that? Can you think for yourself? How many bombs are going to drop on how many English villages before people figure out it's not an accident? It's not a mistake. It's not a gas leak. It's a war. You're at war. You're being attacked. You're being invaded. You're being flooded with hostile adult male foreigners. What do you think is happening? It's crazy. It's crazy. It really is. Let's go to clip number three here. This is, as we've been showing, there's a few images out of Spain where I think I counted about four women in all of those clips we were playing. In most of the clips, there's not a single woman to be found. Here's a video from Calais in France of a group of refugee asylum seeker, aka human neutron bombs, getting on a little raft and floating across the water to the promised land. Let's watch. Now you see the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 20, 30 men in the boat. There are two women in the water. The women are in the water. The men on the boat, women in the water, and they're off. And they leave them behind. And here's the... Oh, she's upset. She's not happy. She's not happy. It's like... Yeah, she should have had her burqa on, obviously. I mean, is that not kind of hilarious? That's literally like, yeah, we're refugees, except we're actually going to throw the women into the water so we can just leave without them and just leave them behind. Just some of the there's white women on the other side. They don't need these women. There's white women who's nobody's protecting. They're just out there like walking around. They don't wear burkas. The cops don't even come if they get raped. It's like, it's like a garden. It's like a garden. Nobody is watching. And all of these people are coming. So So what are we doing? What are we doing about any of that? Like, does anybody have any ideas? Anybody have any plans? Because this is the other absurd thing. As if you need ideas. As if this is a problem to be solved. What? No, you just go, you go fight them. You go stop them from coming into your, to your city. It's just crazy how this happens. Let's go to clip number four here. This is out of Ireland, of all places, or maybe it is England. I can't tell because the people are African. So this is somewhere in Europe. I believe it's either Ireland or England. Here's a random African family being gifted a five-bedroom house by the government, but they're not really happy about it. Let's watch.
Come view with us our new home, new built four-bedroom social housing property we've been offered. This is us going around to check and make sure there are no safety concerns before we accept this property and move in. The garden was quite a good size with a shed. The front, we had a few safety concerns. We then proceed to go up to the rooms and check everything. This is a four-bedroom property, new built, like I said, for a family of eight with four children. We need a property that have enough space for adaptation like stair lift, grab race, and other medical equipment to be fitted in. So unfortunately, this property will not meet our household need and medical needs. So we turn it down and we offer a second property. The second property is a five-bedroom property. We did the same check with a garden, quite a good size. We love it. When proceed inside, look around and everything, like I said, is something that we really, really like. This can be medically adapted with the adaptation that we need in the property to make life easy for myself and my special need children. But I carry on. This property was not given to me by my local council. I have been on my local council register for 6 years. I was never given a property. Anytime I am being offered a property, I'm thrown into ASD, private rent, with shitty landlord. I've seen the most, the damp. This has caused me stress, affect my mental. So I took matter into my own hands to go find my property. If I have known this scheme earlier, I would even dwell on my local council. So please, if you're waiting, go search. I found this property through Right Move on intermittent renting through Bedfordshire Pregnant Housing Association. There are other housing associations who advertise their properties on Right Move, Zoply, and
okay,
other.
I literally haven't understood the last like minute of what she's saying. A family of eight being given a new build, a four bedroom house that they're like, no, it's not good enough. So the council's like, okay, well, can we offer you a five bedroom house that has built-in medical, like, rooms for your retarded children? Like, what? We're at war, folks. Like, what are we doing? What are you doing? What are they doing? What is being done to us? Migrants from Africa, families of eight, with apparently congenital medical conditions, being given houses, not even the four bedroom new build, not good enough. We need the five bedroom so we have a place to put our medical equipment. Y'all, I just, this is what I'm like, what am I supposed to say? What am I? I just showed you a video of London during the Blitz, and I'm sitting here trying to be like, this is a war. We're at war when bombs fall and explode. It's a war when people invade your country. It's a war. You're at war.
America is now 250 years old. July 4th isn't about delicious cheeseburgers and fireworks, though I love them so much. It's about what does America stand for? The globalists cannot have our country survive. They want transhumanism. They want the Great Reset. They want the New World Order. That's why they demonize America. That's why they pay the NBA and the NFL to take a knee during the anthem and push all this communist Chinese garbage. Because what America stands for is antithetical to what they're doing. So, when you go to thealexshowshore.com, we have a whole summer line that just rolled out. We'll show you some of these designs. And most of them, I came up with the concepts. I'm pretty proud of it. I think this is a badass shirt. It's the Betsy Ross flag. And it says, Rebel Scum Since 1776. And the designs just get better from there. And they fund the Second American Revolution happening right now. Because our Revolutionary War never really ended. We're just one continued arc. The flower of the Renaissance challenging totalitarians and authoritarian scum. Because in truth, they're the scum, we are the future, and we are winning.
You wanted 1980 style wife beaters? We got a whole bunch of them with great slogans like less 1984, more 1776. Got another great shirt, make Orwell fiction again, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And I got to tell you, this fabric, how light it is, how good it feels. I asked the folks at Bigley, can we have some dress shirts? And I sent them an example. This is even better than the shirt I bought that was similar to it. This is awesome. This shirt is so light. It's so great in the summer. Get yours now along with dozens of new designs and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Former DNI Tulsi Gabbard was not happy with Anthony Fauci's testimony in front of the Senate yesterday. She made this video. Let's watch.
Before the COVID pandemic, Dr. Fauci, as head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, provided millions in U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, work which is now widely viewed as the source of the unintentional lab leak that sparked the pandemic. Now, in support of President Trump's maximum transparency mandate, today, on my final day as Director of National Intelligence, I'm releasing never-before-seen communications and documents that expose exactly how Fauci worked with politicized career leadership in the intelligence community to suppress the truth about his actions, the virus's lab leak origins, and his role in directing U.S. funding for this dangerous research that caused immeasurable harm and countless lost lives. Now, these documents expose Fauci's direct role in influencing and manipulating IC assessments on COVID-19 and how Fauci lied to Congress in 2024 when under oath he denied knowledge of or participation in discussions with intelligence officials about viral research. We also received testimony from multiple intelligence community whistleblowers who reported retaliation for challenging the intelligence community's manipulation of intelligence on the virus's origins, once again revealing a clear pattern of suppressing dissent, silencing critics, and burying the truth. Dr. Fauci's close relationships with the intelligence community enabled him to assume three key roles that shield him from scrutiny. First, Dr. Fauci funded dangerous gain-of-function coronavirus research linked to Big Pharma and their pursuit of universal vaccines worth trillions of dollars. Second, Dr. Fauci was the behind-the-scenes advisor who, alongside his hand-picked so-called experts, pushed the intelligence community to endorse a natural animal origin to hide his dangerous gain-of-function research that he funded using taxpayer dollars, all of this in a deliberate attempt to cover up the truth and shift the blame and attention away from Fauci's own actions. Third, Dr. Fauci became the nation's pandemic pundit, and he publicly pushed lies, disinformation, and censorship using every platform available. Now, according to hundreds of reviewed emails, which are included in this release, the intelligence community almost always incorporated Fauci's recommendations. He promoted a fraudulent paper whose publication he helped prompt as legitimate information for intelligence community consideration. Senior analysts praised Dr. Fauci not as a policymaker, but as what they called an unbiased guide to the real coronavirus experts, while deliberately ignoring experts who might dissent from Fauci's narratives. Now, Fauci didn't stop there. He blatantly lied to Congress under oath during his 2024 testimony to the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, denying that he ever spoke to any intelligence agency about COVID. Now, the correspondence I'm releasing today directly contradicts his sworn testimony. Now, we received statements from multiple whistleblowers revealing that the intelligence analysts who dared to challenge Dr. Fauci's COVID origin conclusions faced threats of retaliation, marginalization, and many suffered career setbacks. For example, a contractor was terminated just days after coming forward to ODNI as a whistleblower. Another example, those who advocated for the lab leak hypothesis or expressed dissenting views were reminded by their managers that leadership would determine which analysts would be promoted and which would not. The message was clear: go along or be punished. Senior leaders also sought to undermine whistleblowers by removing anonymity, which is required in the whistleblower process, as they made their complaints, and also insisting that their manager...
Right, so that was Tulsi Gabbard. Just to clarify, this was reposted, but this was from her final day as Director of National Intelligence. And that's what she did, is she went out of office, was exposed Fauci one last time. Would have been nice to have him, arrested and tried, but...
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenazidil, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenazidil is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazidil studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Back, folks. Final hour of the War Room. We still have the Iran war to talk about. We got some AI stories. I do want to stick with a few more videos about the migrant crisis, aka the biomass attack. But I thought this was interesting. I'm sure y'all have seen this. A new quadruped drone robot has been released. It's like a centaur. A California startup built a teleoperated rescue robot for wildfires and collapsed buildings, but for some reason they gave it a goat head and glowing eyes, and when they released it, they photographed it holding a chainsaw in one of them, or staring through a door, as if they could make it any more ominous. It's crazy. I don't know why they would make such a demonic-looking thing, but it has a very interesting, aspect to it that I actually really, appreciate and I think should be made a law. I actually think a form of this should be a law. Basically, what it says is, in any robot with human-like strength, size, and maneuverability, we are taking a physical approach to safety mechanisms with no ambiguity. Fail-on air brakes and pin locks will render the robot immobile if system air pressure is lost. Shared reservoirs in the chest, plate, and body can be pierced with a projectile or sharp instrument to instantly stop the robot in place. So in other words, they have these, inflated air sacs inside the robot, and it requires that pressure to keep pins in place for the robot to operate. So basically, they have a built-in function where if anything happens, where it gets taken over by a hacker who wants to use it to attack people, or it gets out of control, basically, if you just have a pencil, if you have anything sharp or a gun, you poke the machine and it just shuts down physically. That's kind of a brilliant solution, because there's you gotta have something. If we're gonna have humanoid robots, if we're going to have centaur-like robots, if we're going to have these, especially if they're not being controlled remotely, but totally autonomous, you gotta have a kill switch. And this is kind of a brilliant way to do it, I think. I don't know. I don't have a lot of other suggestions, but it just, creepy as hell. Very creepy. Like, I have no explanation for why they would put a cow head on it. I don't know. It's crazy. Why the glowing eyes? Why does it look so creepy? I don't know. I'm not defending this thing. It's horrible. Put it back. I don't know what it is. But I do like that function. I do like that it has a physical kill switch, not a digital kill switch. Not something you have to, like, get to the robot to press a button or enter a code or anything else you have to actually rely on the robot to do. You literally have it physically built to where it cannot function if it's pierced. That's great. That should be a law. It should be like, if you're going to deploy autonomous robots, thinking machines, things that make decisions on their own, that interact with the physical world and are making decisions through algorithm, you have to have a way to disable it. Knock, knock, superhuman bots are here. Satyrus three halves superhumanoid bot goes viral. So that's the bot we're talking about here. Yeah, it's very weird. But again, like I said, that function alone, I think, is very unique and interesting. And I'm surprised I haven't seen more of that. So again, I mean, you know, they're not going to do it if they don't have to. Like, these people did, obviously, but I think it needs to be a law. I think it needs to be enforced by the government that you cannot release these things if they are not easily, like, and I think it should be like an average human should be able to beat it. Like, you should not be able to release a robot that interacts physically with the world if it cannot be easily defeated by a human being. Can we do something like that? It's kind of a new upgrade to the Asimov's law, because Asimov's law was supposed to be that the robot couldn't be programmed to hurt anybody. But what if it was just like, no, this robot has to be, it can be physically strong. It can do great things. It could be carrying a tonnage of weight, and it can be climbing up sheer walls and all that. But it should have some mechanism where a human being, ideally an unarmed human being, can disable it easily. Like the treadmills at the gym with that red wire that you attach to your clothes. Like, that's what every robot needs to have, like a wire coming out of its head that if you grab it and pull it, the whole thing shuts down. Because, you know, what I like about it was that it's handicapped people can't beat it exactly. Well, it has to be ADA compliant. There has to be a ramp up to the off switch. Oh, God, it's horrifying. But the thing I like about it is that it's physical. It's not a function of the robot that could easily be, like, even overridden by AI, who could, like, go in and change its own internal code and stuff like that. But just physically, it cannot operate if the pressure is lost. So all you have to do is cut it, and it stops working. Physically stops working. That's brilliant. I thought that was brilliant and should be used in more, should be forced to be used in more things. All right. When we're talking about immigration, we just saw a video of a bunch of Muslim guys literally kick women off a boat, leave them in the water and drive away. And that was funny. This one's not so funny, but informative and kind of typical. Three migrant women were found dead, quote, from heart attacks on board a boat in the English Channel. Three migrants have been found dead on a boat in the English Channel off the coast of Dunkirk. The French Coast Guard said the bodies were found this morning. The French authorities said they were alerted to the migrant boat from 6 a.m. local time, departing from the Dunkirk area, and sent a search and rescue vehicle to monitor the situation. Around 6:30 a.m., the rescue ship identified three unconscious individuals on board. The victims were brought ashore, and they were confirmed dead. All three women are believed to have suffered heart attacks on board. French official, were they vaxxed? Were they given vaxes, perhaps, before getting on the boat? We don't know. A fourth migrant, a man, also died when his dinghy got into difficulty in a separate incident off the coast of Danes or something. But basically, this was a boat full of men. And I believe there were only three women on it, and all three women ended up dead. And the men are like, yeah, they all had heart attacks, so can we come in your country now? Yeah, we arrived in a rubber dinghy this morning. Sorry about the dead women bodies. They died. What happened to them? They died. How'd they die? death, I guess. I mean, that happens. That happens. Yeah. You know, women have a natural, you know, cycle that they line up. So, you know, who's to say, you know, what are the odds? You put 20 people together, three of them die within a couple minutes of each other. That happens, you know, it happens. There's like covered in blood. There's like covered in blood and like looking at pictures of them killing the women. They're just like, bah, they died. Heart attacks, probably. So look, it was either the vaccine, a death note, or the migrants murdered the women. Those are going to be my assumptions. The death note's from an anime that doesn't even exist. And the vaccine, that's just a joke I said. So yeah, they were murdered by the migrants. I've eliminated all ulterior explanations, and I've determined that, in fact, a boat full of migrants arrived at shore with the three women on the boat dead and all the men alive, saying it was a heart attack, and then they all got brought into England because apparently they believe it because that's what the headline says. So, I mean, my God. They dump the bodies. They know what to do. There's the murder suspect right there. Yeah, that was him. He was seen eating an apple close by. Look, I'm not saying that I spend an inordinate amount of time fantasizing about having a death note. I do think I could save the world. I do think Light is an idiot. He should have given it to me. Let's go to clip 7 now, because this is what we're doing to ourselves. These are the people that we're bringing into our country, that England's bringing into their country, that all of Europe is being subsumed under the wave of these people. It's Nick Shirley in America talking to ostensibly, technically, legally, on paper, Americans, asking them who they'd fight for if America and the religion of Islam went to war. Let's watch.
Now you have all these Islam men yelling Allah Akbar. I have a question for you guys. If America were to get in a war with someone, with a country like Iraq, who would you guys defend, America or Iraq?
We won't get in a war. That's not permissible for us. But at the same time,
who would you defend first?
We would support our brothers in Iraq. That's the only way.
So you wouldn't defend America?
We would not defend America.
But you're American.
At the same time, America is our country because we were born here. But in our Islamic book, we're not allowed to fight with people that are against our religion. So we just take up the jail time.
So you would
that's
not.
What we do.
So you would not defend America.
I would go to jail instead of fighting for America.
And who would you defend if we were to go to war against a country like Iraq again, America or Iraq?
America.
And should that be a troublesome conflict of interest for somebody to be here in America that I'd rather support another nation like Iraq?
Anybody who supports another nation needs to live in that nation. This is a Christian nation. A lot of the Constitution is based off of the Bible. And how far the country has fallen.
Like, this is kind of what I mean, you know. Like, that person should be deported. Or killed. Like, they're an enemy combatant. Right? Am I wrong? And like, what could, you know, what would you say in opposition to that? Like, if I had the power, if I had the authority, and I could point and go, all right, that guy needs to be shipped to Iraq tomorrow. What would the argument be? Oh, you can't. You have to let him. Why do we have to let him stay? He's literally asked, if America went to war with Iraq, who would you support? And he's like, Iraq. They're our brothers. It's like, okay, so you're an enemy. So you're not American. You don't perceive yourself as American. You're born here. You're second, at least, maybe third generation. But you're not American. You're not on our team. You don't like us. So, like, that's, like, you know, I'm sure he would say, oh, this is unfair. No, but I'm American just like you. You know, if you were like, okay, well, then you're being deported to Iraq, he'd probably, you know, he'd rebel. He wouldn't like it. He'd argue against it. But like, but you just said that you would support Iraq over America in a war. You are a national security threat. You are an enemy combatant behind enemy lines. Why do we put up with this? Like, that's crazy. But that's, he was born here. He's a citizen. American as you and me, legally. Voting. Wise, absolutely. So just literally, you know, literally why, and like, the mindset that's like that, where they go, yeah, I live in your country, but I'm open about the fact that I would support another country militarily if we went to war. I would support that other country. What I don't understand is, like, if I were to say that, if I were to move to Iraq and had somebody ask me, hey, would you support America in Iraq? And I'd be like, America, 100%. If they were like, you have to get out of the country now, I'd be like, what? What? No, you have to keep me here, even though I'm an enemy. Like, we should just kick them out. We should kick all of them out. Why are any of them here? Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. You know, it's guys, I figured out the solution. It's kick them the hell out of our country. If we go back in time, don't let them in the first place. But you did, so now you have to kick them out. You have to kick them out. We have to kick them out. Or we have to fight them. Or one day we're going to have to fight them because they're not American. Do we understand this? Don't get me wrong. You know, I understand that it's, you know, we have big concerns with the Zionists too. We're not falling for the false dichotomy. We're recognizing two sides of the same coin. And we're against the coin. We're against the whole damn coin. Let's go now to a little compilation video about Islam in Texas. It's a little bit upsetting, to be honest with you, but we'll do it if I can find it. In fact, let's go to clip 10 first. I haven't actually watched this one. This is Eric Schmidt, Senator Eric Schmidt, saying he blocked 3,500 Haitians from receiving temporary protected status earlier. Let's watch.
Last week, I objected to the Democrats' attempt to give 350,000 Haitians an extended TPS. Today, I'm objecting to this Democrat attempt to give millions of illegal aliens mass amnesty, green cards, and work authorizations. I will always object to this mass amnesty. I will always object to this mass migration. I will always object to putting American workers last. I will always object to tying the hands of our law enforcement. So therefore, Mr. President, I object.
Good for him. Problem solved, I'm sure. Let's go to clip number 16 now. A little compilation, Texas versus Islam.
Country of my Texas.
There's something about Texas and how God is blessed, and God has blessed the people of Texas.
When I see God connecting all of us the way that he is, I go, man, he's raising an army.
Man.
If we want to stay here, we must talk to America about Sharia.
Nobody in the government, civilian government, DOD, Intel, knew anything about Sharia.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Did you find that the Biden administration's DHS had a formal vetting process in place?
The department did not have a formal process at the start of the OAW.
That's astounding.
My wife got confronted at 9:30 at a grocery store parking lot. My guy's saying, you should not be on the street. You're going to be raped.
People get excited and the rape is done. Who's to blame? It is even the girl to blame.
Under his system, he's allowed to rape any woman that's unattended.
My cousin was 13 or 14, Jeanette. She woke up naked in a house. Lots of bearded Muslims raping her.
There's no such thing as a Muslim country where children are not trafficked.
What you have right there is a clash of civilizations, not a clash of religions, a clash of civilizations.
Is Islam a religion?
It's a civilization, not a religion.
What about the Muslim Brotherhood? What about Hezbollah? What about Hamas? What ties the entire global movement together is Sharia. The stated purpose of Islam is to wage jihad.
They don't apologize about jihad. They're not afraid of jihad. It's a part of who we are.
Since 2020, there's been over 500 Catholic churches that have been assaulted. You don't hear about the Christian churches that have been attacked. If a mosque was attacked, they would be crucified.
If you build a mosque in the middle of nowhere, you're going to get Islamists. And Muslims come.
These imams or clerics are openly calling for the takeover of this country, the Islamization of this country.
This is the correct religion, and we will not stop until it enters every home.
Imam says to me in the interview that the United Kingdom will be a Muslim country within 20 years.
I stood outside a mosque in Manchester, and when I stood there, within a two-mile radius, I found that 16 people had gone to fight for ISIS.
And you see areas like Paris or London, whose culture is being absolutely eroded.
You have a lot of people from the Muslim Brotherhood that have infiltrated all areas of our intelligence community, of our legal community, and into the government.
Why would you put a knife to your own throat?
Army Major Nidal Hassan was convicted of killing 13 people and wounding 32 others.
The state with the most jihadi attacks in the United States, Texas.
We are in a battle not just for the future of Texas or the future of the United States of America. Texas is on the front lines in the battle for nothing less than the future of Western civilization.
Don't be deceived and don't be afraid.
You have Texas politicians believing in whatever keeps them elected. If Texas falls, that the rest of the United States falls.
Don't mess with Texas.
Shepherds aren't weak, and I'm not weak, and I'm not going to let anyone come in here and hurt this flock.
America starts in Texas. This is another Alamo. This time, we're going to win.
The battle for Texas begins now.
It says, remember the Alamo movie.com. We'll get into more of this on the other side of a commercial break. But the Middle East is not anywhere close to settling down. The war in Iran continues, which when you look at everything else going on, just a little reminder of the priorities that our government maintains. You know, there was a good story today. Donald Trump is doing an initiative to give CDL commercial driver's licenses to veterans rather than illegal immigrants. So that's good. That'll be good. It's a start. It's certainly a start. There's also, apparently, they are now starting to arrest people who hire illegal aliens, not just the illegal aliens. They seem to be getting a little bit serious about deportations now. It's just that they're not really. But I mean, not really in any meaningful way. Remember, reported yesterday, there have been more anchor baby births than deportations in Trump's second administration. So this program helps streamline CDL licensing for veterans with heavy vehicle experience. Which, again, that's good. That's good. But it's like, it's one of these things where, why is this an issue? How were there no controls or barriers to giving out commercial driver's licenses to hundreds of thousands of foreign employees who don't speak English, cannot read the road signs that they need to adhere to for us to survive? It's another one of these situations where, once again, we're supposed to celebrate the reversal of a policy that should have never been implemented in the first place, a situation that never should have been allowed in the first place. And even in the most generous, like, interpretation of this stuff, you know, you could say, you know, things like, you do the calculations, a Indian person from India, if they open a gas station and an American opens a gas station, there's something like $250,000 worth of grants that the Indian gets that the American doesn't. Now, I don't know when this was implemented. Maybe in the 70s, we were like in desperate need of a gas station operator, so we made some carve outs. But like, it's enough. Enough already. We've had enough of that. We don't need any of these people here. I don't know how many times and different ways I can say it, but just we're being invaded and flooded and destroyed, so we should stop them from doing that, but we won't. Over and over.
And a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get Masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Who took the bomb?
All right, welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room. I have a bunch of really crazy stories to go over with you here. I do want to remind you that we now sell ivermectin and mebendazole. It's available at 1776rx.health. It's one of the biggest health launches we've ever done. You, of course, know about ivermectin. But for the first time, we have launched a powerful dual-action prescription parasite treatment combining ivermectin with mebendazole. These are two serious anti-parasitic medications that work in different ways. Ivermectin targets certain parasites by disrupting their nervous system. Mebendazole targets intestinal worms by blocking their ability to absorb the energy they need to survive. Together, they provide a broad-spectrum approach against multiple types of parasitic infections. Let me tell you something. Parasites aren't just some problem that exists in other countries or are other countries or people from other countries. People can be exposed through the contamination of food, water, through travel, animals, and their environment. Many people might not even realize they've been exposed, and that's why access matters. This is real human-use prescription medication, not veterinary paste, not something from a feed store, and not some questionable product shipped from overseas. It ships directly to your door from a licensed U.S. pharmacy. Again, this combines ivermectin plus mebendazole in one powerful dual-action prescription parasite treatment. Go to 1776rx.health right now. That's 1776rx.health to get your order if you get the prescription. The prescription is required, but by going to 1776rx.health, you can talk to a licensed provider and find out whether the treatment is right for you. We also have, of course, the summer sale going on. But like I've said before, these are very popular products, and, you know, a lot of our products, like a lot of our news, sort of become, you know, really big trends, or they are really big trends, and we offer a version of it. Ivermectin and mebendazole I've been hearing about forever, but you don't know who to trust. I don't know who to trust. I don't know what the good stuff is because I don't know much about it. So I got to go with whatever the marketing material says, and you can't really trust that. So I'm so happy that now we have it. Now the Alex Jones Network provides it because I can trust us. I can trust the Alex Jones Network. I don't have to worry about cycling through, going through a whole bunch of different options and trying to determine which is the best and which has it's a one-stop shop. And that really is the case with all of our products. I really should have covered it at the time, but there was a big hit piece article against Shilajit because it was talking about how the new testosterone boosting supplement that is all the craze can actually have heavy metals if you're not careful. And that's true. If you go get the lower quality stuff, I don't know what's in it. You don't know what's in it. We don't even know if there's Shilajit in it. You know, people can lie on products. That's why it's great that anything you get from the Alex Jones store, you know, we have gone through every process available. We have applied every filter you could get your hands on. We have guaranteed that these things are free of heavy metals, have been filtered and purified, and are bioavailable. We give you the best products that we can possibly get our hands on. The supplements themselves are at the highest, you know, percentage of the active ingredients, and they're bioavailable, and they're the best price that we can offer and still run a company. So I think if that alone to me is like, if you've been looking at this stuff and going, it sounds pretty good, but you know, do I really want to, you know, buy something? I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know who, you know, what quality it is. You know, people see it's a popular product, so they want to make their own, but maybe they'll cut corners. You know, we don't cut corners on our products, or anywhere for that matter, but certainly not on our products, because we have a very simple philosophy, which is that we don't just want, we need you to return. We need you to be returning customers. It does nothing for us to sell you a product one time, have you not liked the product, and never come back. Why would we do that? We wouldn't be here if that's how we operated. No, we give you the highest quality product at the best possible prices because we believe that once you try them out, you'll be a return customer. Because even if you've tried, you know, methylene blue before, maybe you got a bad, you know, batch. Maybe whoever you're buying it from didn't have the same quality assurances that we do. But you know, when you buy a product from the alexjonesstore.com, and this is even true for the t-shirts, like, you know, it's going to be a quality t-shirt. You know, it's going to be a quality supplement. You know, it's going to be the highest possible quality that we can ever offer you. And while I can't say that for other supplement companies, I can guarantee you that we have the best available out there. I have so many crazy stories. I have so many crazy stories in this last hour. We'll start with this one. And I saw people read this headline and be like, you might not believe this. Our audience will believe this. Our audience already knows this to a large degree. It says, This is from the Blade or Daily Wire, actually. DailyWire.com says, I went to a quote unquote teen takeover. It ended with gunshots and was put on by the government. He says, I just left dinner with friends in northern Washington, D.C. last Friday. After we said goodbye, I started walking alone through LaDroit Park towards the nearest metro station. Within minutes, sirens started. Several police cars appeared almost immediately, and almost as quickly, the street was filled with black teenagers flooding in from several different directions at once. Some walked, others sprinted, and teens carrying blaring speakers took over the street. Hundreds of teens packed the roadway. I asked a few of the kids running past what was happening. They yelled obscenities at me and kept going. Soon I realized I had found myself in the middle of a quote-unquote teen takeover. So, which used to be known as race riots. They used to be called race riots. Now they're called teen takeovers for some reason. I didn't get the memo. I'm not sure why they rebranded, but makes sense. Sounds better. Teen takeover. That sounds like an event at a church. That's like, oh, it is an alliteration. Race riot, teen takeover. It's catchy. It is catchy. Like, that genuinely is probably something that they workshopped. If I came out and they're like, all right, so we're doing this thing where we allow regularly hundreds of black people to riot and destroy things and fight each other and shoot guns and block off streets and attack police officers, but we don't want to call it race riot. Can we come up with some other terms? Teen takeover is what they went with. He says, I moved to the edge of one of the groups and walked with them. An 18-year-old girl named McCalla told me the event was coordinated by DPR. I asked what the letter stood for, and she didn't know. Only the DPR puts these events together for teens to, quote, come out and have fun. She said the organizers reached the kids through Instagram. It turns out DPR is the District of Columbia's Department of Parks and Recreation. The teens I spoke to that night said they were there for the government-organized event. Leslie Knope. Leslie Knope putting on teen takeovers. That would be good. All right, somebody with AI credits to make video. Somebody's got to do an episode of Parks and Recreation where they put on a teen takeover event. And Andy gets shot by one of the teens. Andy can get shot by one of the teens. I mean, it could be a real, you know, cascade of hilarity, I think. You know, these other cities are putting on teen takeovers. They're having a lot of success with them. And like halfway through the episode, she's in way over her head, you know. The teens are like locking her in a locker as they rob the city hall. So it's put on by Department of Parks and Recreation. The Washington, D.C. Municipal Government Department of Parks and Recreation uses Instagram to invite teenagers to riot weekly. So there you go. Are you surprised? Shouldn't be. It is crazy. So again, let me just read it again, just in case you think I'm making things up here. It turns out DPR is the District of Columbia's Department of Parks and Recreation. The teens I spoke to that night said they were all there for the government-organized event. Its Instagram account identifies it as a government organization that organizes, quote, fun programs and events. One of those events, according to the department's website, is called Late Night Hype. It's a program created in 2021 to give teens and young adults safe, high-energy spaces to connect after hours. The government office had planned a late-night hype event at the Banneker Rec Center fields just north of LaDroit Park, according to its online schedule of events. Attendees knew what was coming. A young Muslim man in a kippah, whatever, named Jannar, joined us as we walked. I asked him what the kids usually do at these DPR events. He answered without softening it. All right, I'll censor it. I don't like it. All these N-words out here are wildin'. He described how the teens rob each other and take each other's shoes and clothes. McCalla said at most of these events, the teens go overboard and take it, quote, to the next level. When I asked what that looked like, Jannar said, you gonna see. We moved through alleys, dodging police cars and leaving spots fast because fights kept starting. McCullough said DPR calls these late-night hype events for teens and families to hang out and have good fun. The signs, she said, are made on the spot to get experience with graffiti. As both McCullough and Jannar warned, fights broke out. I moved closer to one of the fights to record it. As I approached to get footage, everyone was running the other way. Seconds later, I witnessed a masked teenager fire off a gunshot. I stopped for a second. The masked ones ran, and the rest of the crowd continued faster with them. I'd gotten McCullough's phone number, and we were able to reconnect. This is why we can't have fun, because they want to act a fool, she told me. McCullough told me the area was under a youth curfew. No one cared. She said these kids target other people. Then she said something more direct. She has watched, on multiple occasions, at these same events, kids shooting at each other or jumping kids. She said it was commonplace. I asked several teenagers in ski masks why they covered their faces. One said, I can't say too much. Another said, they gonna lock us up. A witness near me claimed the police, quote, shot people, which almost certainly didn't happen. What happened was pepper balls after the gunfire and after more fights started inside the running crowd. The teenagers stampeded in short bursts with no clear provocation, even with the National Guard standing in view, and they kept doing it. I asked an officer for comment. She said she could not give the details, but confirmed an investigation into the discharge of a weapon was open and that numerous shots had been fired. I told her I had video of one of the shots. She told me to submit it through their information page so I could be listed as a witness. At that moment, they had no other footage of the shots. While I spoke, other officers dealt with teenagers yelling obscenities at them and stretched caution tape to protect the crime scene. I gave authorities my statement and left. On the way out, I watched officers arrest the person I'd seen fire the first shot. No further information has been released. What the Department of Parks and Recreation frames under the guise of an opportunity for teenagers to gather and have fun, instead fosters a place for teens to commit crimes. They all knew what was going to happen. It was not an isolated incident. As Heather McDonald has written in the Daily Wire, the same trend is popping up from Chicago to Florida and repeated outbreaks inside Washington itself. Large groups of urban teenagers, often coordinated online, take over public space, and mass violence follows with enough regularity that participants treat it as expected. According to the teenagers who attend these events regularly, the violence happens at every single one. I wonder what they would say to the children who have been murdered by others at these takeover, whose behaviors they condone. There are late night hype events planned for the next three Fridays this summer. The Department of Parks and Recreation did not respond to for a comment. Do I need to comment? Do I need to reiterate? You have the Department of Parks and Recreation literally organizing riots for children, where every single time the kids go there for no other what else were they doing? Like, I like how it's like it inevitably devolves into violence and what else would they do? There's nothing else for them to do. You are just assigning a portion of the city to be a fight club, a riot, a mob violent attack for this afternoon. Just that's where it's going to be. Do the violence there. What the hell are we doing here? What is this? This has been going on since 2021. Since 2021, the Washington, D.C. Department of Parks and Recreation has been deliberately organizing teenage riots so they can come together and shoot each other and fight each other. What else are they going to do? They're like, we have a weekend of fun for families and teens. It's like, well, what do you provide? Is there a bounce house? Is there face painting? Are there snow cones? Are there rides? Is there literally anything? No, it's a big empty field where we tell every black child in D.C. to go to, and we say there's no laws tonight. Have fun. And they kill each other. And we do it again the next week. Okay, great. It's Idiocracy. It's Idiocracy. That could be, it would have to be all of Parks and Recreation, because they do it every week. Like, first you have an episode of Parks and Rec where Leslie Knope decides to give teenagers a fun thing to do, and, you know, it ends up to be a murder scene, but then they do it the next week, and the next week, and the next week, and the week after that. just add it onto the pile, I guess, of things that just our government does that have no possible basis in reality. There's absolutely no excuse for this. There's no, like what? They just organize riots. The Department of Parks and Recreation gets on Instagram and tells every hoodlum in D.C. to go to a park to commit mass violence, and that's it. And that is the point, you understand, right? If you're an individual or even a small group of people, if you commit violence, you're probably the only one there committing violence. It'll be easy to identify and arrest you. If instead every criminal in the city gathers, then just by sheer force of numbers, you can do whatever you want. I'm against this. You know, this is one of those things that I can firmly say I don't think this is good. You know, I think personally that you shouldn't have your local government organizing riots every weekend for children. I think that's not a good idea. I'm having trouble seeing the benefit here. Because it sounds like it was a pretty tame one for this fella. Sounds like, just one shooting. He didn't say if anybody got hurt or not. But even in this minimal expression of violence, of course, talks about fights and everything, and, you know, those are just going to be bodily injury. No big deal there. You have a gunshot. So now you're talking about like tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of police time and investigative time. And if you actually arrest the guy, then you got to hold him and book him and you got to charge him. And it would have never happened if they hadn't delivered. And there's a curfew, apparently. So this might be the craziest part. There's a teen curfew because even without the government deliberately organizing the mass criminality, it's so bad that they say basically if you're not an adult, you're not allowed on the street after a certain time. But then the Parks and Recreation Department plans giant teen gatherings in the areas with the curfew, saying don't worry about it. And of course they don't, because once again, if it was a curfew and you're a single teen out, then you might get caught and put away. But if there's 500 of you, there's no way the police can arrest all of you. So they just don't arrest any of you. So you get away with it. You break the curfew, you commit the crimes, and then you come back the next week. I would really be interested because they're not, right? They're not the only ones doing this. Like, D.C. is not the only city doing this, I bet. It actually kind of makes sense, because you keep seeing these videos of teen takeovers, and it's always kind of the same cities where they happen. It turns out it's not spontaneous. It's deliberate. It's organized by the government doing it. There was a time when the left would actually have conversations. It's pretty obvious why that doesn't exist anymore. Because just like the Fauci thing, this is another one where I would love to ask a Democrat, a leftist, like, are you in favor of this? Do you think this is a good idea? Can you rationalize this? Can you justify this? If this wasn't happening and I suggested it should start, would you think I was crazy or what? Like, if we'd never heard of this, I have an idea. Let's have the Department of Recreation start to create riots every week. Like, who would be in favor of that? What is the argument for this? That could be the question of, like, everything that we're doing. And in most cases, you know, it's like, it doesn't make any sense what they're doing, but it's not just like impossible to imagine a positive outcome, right? You point at the war in Iran and go, why are we doing this? This has nothing to do with us. It's not our concern. They're not a danger to us. This is clearly for the sake of Israel, blah, blah, blah. You could say all that stuff. But you can have the other side saying, well, but, you know, China and whatever, you know, oil and this sort of stuff. At least there's some ambiguity there. At least I can hear what is the argument for this? Why is our government engaged in so many things? like this, where the only possible outcome is violence and terror and insanity and chaos. There is no other possible outcome. So why are we doing it? So you just read the headlines like, the government will no longer be offering free houses for immigrants. They'll no longer be, you know, forcing banks to give loans to immigrants that can't afford it. And it's just like, why are we doing this? Why was it happening in the first place? How are these things going on? It's been going on since 2021. Nobody's realized up till now. We haven't realized that for the last 5 years, every weekend, they're organizing riots on purpose. On Instagram? Okay, great. Crazy. But there you go. Meanwhile, biohacker Brian Johnson, who wanted to, quote, live forever, now fears he's, quote, unquote, taken it too far. I may take it a little too far here. It's just like Darth Vader. A billionaire biohacker who wanted to live forever is seemingly questioning his life choices after being diagnosed with an incurable disease. Brian Johnson, whose viral stunts in pursuit of eternal life have included injecting himself with his son's blood plasma and tweeting detailed reports on his wife's private parts, recently revealed he had developed autoimmune gastritis. It's an incurable chronic condition where the immune system mistakenly attacks healthy cells in the stomach lining. And the diagnosis appears to have left the 48-year-old venture capitalist questioning whether his pursuit for better health and a longer life was worth all the effort. Writing on X, Johnson wrote, "Been thinking things over and wonder if I've taken this whole longevity thing too far." I love it. I don't know why. That's so funny to me. Johnson's diagnosis comes after years of unusual treatments and therapies that have set him back around $10 million, all done in the name of longevity. Yeah, he's a freak. He's a complete freak. And he looks older than he is anyway. It's like, that might be the weirdest part. Like, I don't know. To me, he looks older than Alex. Right, yeah. If he was 80 years old and looked like this, I'd be like, wow, he must be onto something. But you show me this guy and you're like, would you believe this man is 48 years old? I'd be like, yes. Yeah, no, that's exactly how old he looks, actually. I'm 36 years old. I'm like the least healthy person you can imagine. Maybe it's the supplements from the AlexJonesStore.com. I eat whatever the hell I want. I probably drink more Dr. Pepper than I do water. I'm a slave to sweet things. I do not work out. I don't do anything for my health. Except go to the AlexJonesStore.com. The one thing I do for health, you want to increase your longevity, folks. You want to be young like me at heart. Go to the AlexJonesStore.com/Harrison and make a purchase. You don't need to inject anybody's blood into you. You don't need to do any weird things. You don't. Oh, he does methylene blue. Look at that. Brian Johnson approves of methylene blue. You too can live forever like Brian Johnson. Guys, did you know that pursuing immortality has negative consequences? What? Are you kidding me? Really? Since when? Oh, the beginning of time in Adam and Eve, right? Ah, I forgot about that. It's the whole thing, isn't it?
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if. It's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.